Yes, don't fully understand why we are prevented from talking about that thing, but we won't. Instead, I will introduce you later today. I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a guest, to the man who brought us one of the finest moments in television history, arguably the best ever unintentional TV episode, something to which I frequently return when I'm in need of a bit of a giggle. I think you've worked out who it is. If you haven't, I'll probably forget to tease it, but I'll try to remember. Mystery Hour at 12, of course, because, of course, we just have to fill the show with things that are not that thing we can't talk about. So wait and see what we're starting with.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to LBC that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. Two British people on board the cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned to the UK and are now self-isolating at home. Three people have died on board the ship, which set sail last month. Chief Scientific Officer Professor Robin May has given this update to LBC.
In terms of the individuals concerned, there are also, you know, very small numbers of people that we will be focusing on. So we're working very closely with them. Each individual is different. And so clearly, you know, people who are already at home, there's different arrangements. The people that are currently on the ship still, we're making arrangements for. And it's being decided on an individual basis what the best way for them to self-isolate is. But we'll continue to work very closely with them until we believe any possible risk has passed.
Officials are looking into reports the outbreak started when a Dutch couple visited a landfill site during a birdwatching trip in Argentina. Speaking to LBC this morning, consultant virologist Dr. Chris Smith explained more.
They're entertaining the hypothesis that at least one or two of the people on the ship had been to an area where there were lots of birds and birds flock to waste dumps. So they went to this tip to see a particular bird species, and they may have encountered an environment where there were lots of rodents. Rodents are obviously drawn to rubbish because they pick through it. Bites allegedly can transmit this virus, but much more common is going to be breathing in particles which have been shed by the animals.
President Trump says it's very possible that a deal to end the war with Iran can be reached. Tehran has said that it is reviewing a new proposal from America, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former Met officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog is looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. The former Harrods owner died in 2023, having never faced any charges. More than 400 allegations have been made against Al-Fayed, dating back to 1977. Shell says its earnings have jumped by nearly 25% in a year, thanks in part to the disruption caused by the war in Iran. The oil company says it's made more than £5 billion in the first 3 months of 2026. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 48 points at 10,390. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, cloudy elsewhere. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Genuinely extraordinary. Just how much excitement the studio guest that I'll have later today engenders. Just glancing at my inbox, most of you have worked out who it is. If you're of a certain age, it's probably the elephant doing a poo on Blue Peter, isn't it? That you used to think of first when you had a sort of television studio-based moment that went entirely awry. This is not in the script. This was not planned. Was it John Noakes desperately trying to sort of clear? And then along came Guy Gomer, the gentleman who thought that, well, who was at the BBC for a job interview, I think in the IT department, and who then found himself preparing, well, he found himself live on television being interviewed about something he wasn't previously aware of, and yet he rose to the challenge in the most extraordinary fashion. Only afterwards, watching it back, because very few people had watched it on the time, I think it was on the 24-hour news channel, you could see this extraordinary opera play out on his face. He's blessed with one of those incredibly expressive physogs, and this sort of operatic drama played out on his features, oscillating from almost impish mischief through to abject terror. And the entire world was entranced. And then he disappeared. Well, he's reappeared. Not only has he reappeared, he's collaborated on a new book. And we will be meeting him at about half, all being well, at about 11:30 today. I have interviewed prime ministers. Have I ever interviewed a president? I don't think I've ever interviewed a president. I've interviewed a vice president. I have interviewed pop stars, film stars, stars of stage and screen, sports stars. I've done them all. I've counted them in and I've counted them out. Just go and have a look at the back catalogue of Full Disclosure episodes. Never mind the people who've appeared on this programme. But I'm not sure anybody has popped up in my thoughts over the years as often as Guy Gomer. I suspect that if you were to look at my YouTube history, you would find that I refer back over the years since it happened. I've gone back to that clip to show it to people who were unaware of it, which is always extraordinary to me, and then just to refresh my own memory of that moment of magic, that moment of beauty. And he will be with us in about an hour and a half's time. And speaking of things that... So, do you remember that thing? I know I say this a lot, but you're used to it by now, and frankly, you know, it's kind of charming. Well, that thing a few years ago, when there was a big hoo-ha about men thinking about the Roman Empire. I still never really got my head around that. It was, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? I talked to Eleanor about this some mornings, and she looks at me with that long-suffering expression. So you're not talking about this again. Because when I don't get something, you know, I worry at it. Like a dog with a bone. I don't understand something. I want you to explain it to me. There's quite a few things as I get older that I just don't understand. And I want you to explain them to me. Earlier this week we were talking about something political, so I can't even tell you what it was. But I don't understand this. Why was the big thing about people talking about the Roman Empire? How often do you think about the Roman Empire? I thought, is this a sort of thing that I'm not in on? Is this a joke, the punchline to which has not been shared with me? What? But there are some things that get into your brain and occupy a very strange space. They take up more space than they should. And you find your mind returning to this territory again and again and again, even when there's much more important or much more exciting things going on in the world. And oddly, I'm pretty sure these stories were around before I had my moment in Marks and Spencer's the other day, which I've spoken to you now about on at least two different occasions. I think we've done two phone-ins on this subject since I had my moment in Marks and Spencer's. And I'm pretty sure these stories were around before. Well, I know that they were, because one of the ones that we focused on was already in the news when I found myself having my moment in Marks and Spencer's. But every time they come around again, this is the thing that is occupying the strangest space in my mind. What would you do as a member of the public, never mind a member of staff, if a member of supermarket staff was trying to contain a potentially violent shoplifter? What would you do? And you don't know until it happens. I think I know what I would do. I would sort of hold back until somebody else did something. I'm not going to, I mean, I'm not comfortable touching a woman shoplifter in any way, shape or form. Not because I'm worried about being sued or anything like that or accused of inappropriate behaviour. I just don't, I wasn't raised that way. I would find it very, very hard to use physical force in any way to subdue a woman, for good or for ill. I'm being completely honest with you. And if it was a weak-looking bloke, I don't think I'd go first. I just don't think I would. I'm not. It's just the way you're built. You're either built that way or you're not, aren't you? But if you went first and you got the fella in a headlock and he's writhing around the place, I might then come in with a sort of rugby tackle or maybe not a rugby tackle. I don't want to get my trousers dirty. But I might. Do you see what I mean? I there's a word for that, isn't there? It's not bystander syndrome. It's something. Anyway, I think about it a lot. What would you actually do? And then these stories come along. And remember, the stories are usually about members of staff. And I think that my colleague Connor Hand, here at LBC, I think he has found what is arguably the worst example yet of a member of staff being punished for doing what we largely believe to be the right thing. That's the point. This is why I find it so morally fascinating. So it's I'm bizarrely obsessed with the question of what would you do? I got in a taxi, literally after the show, the last show on which we did. I'm so sorry I didn't ask your name, mate, if you're listening. But the last time we did this, I got in a taxi with a colleague from the marketing department. He was taking me off somewhere to sing for my supper. And I got in, I sat down, and the taxi driver said, I'll tell you what, James, I'm like that bloke. And I said, pardon? And he said, I'd have to get stuck in. It drives my wife mad. But if I saw someone shoplifting, I would have to get involved. I'd have to grab him. And I thought, you check the guy out a little bit, and he's younger than me. He's a little bit more muscly than I am. And you use that as a little bit of an excuse. And I said, well, I don't know that you should. I kind of side with your wife on this, because you could get hurt. You could get stabbed. You could get knocked out. You could get into all sorts of bother. And of course, there's also possibilities you're going to get a bit carried away. You might chin him. He might fall over. He might bang his head and something terrible could happen and you'd be on the hook for that. He says, I know all of that, but I can't help myself. And I don't think that that is an ignoble urge. I don't think that is something that we should be trying to subdue from our society, because I think it is something that we could call civic duty. But it doesn't make monkeys of the rest of us. The people who are not going to go and do that shouldn't feel bad about it, but they should dedicate some serious thought to the question of what we want other people to do. And that's where we will be today. That's what we will do today. Andrew in Bollington speaks for many when he writes, I'm a new listener, James, and I can't relax. What on earth was your moment in Marks and Spencer's? Well, I should explain, shouldn't I? So there I was in Marks and Spencer's, having covered on a couple of occasions stories about shoplifters being cautioned by members of staff and the members of staff being punished. I'm not going to give you the details of the latest story. I'm going to try and hit the junction on time. All right, stop sniggering. It might happen one day. Keith, please, a bit of professionalism. I'm going to try and hit the junction on time, and then Helen Holdenott will join us in the next segment of the programme to give us the full SP on this story. Because there are ballots underway, can I say that? I'm frightened. I can't talk about it. I'm not talking about anything. The big story today, not allowed to talk about it. Not allowed to talk about it. Okay, so I'm not talking about it. So the show will be slightly different. This is actually why we invented Mystery Hour. So we'd have at least 1 hour on a day like today where we would be fairly confident that we wouldn't accidentally run into the thing that we can't run into. So Helen will join me shortly to talk about the specific story under discussion today, the story of Gary MacArthur and Sainsbury's. And then we're going to look at what we think about that. What do we want people to do? What do we want people to do? Genuinely, what do we want people to do? So there I was, about a year ago, walking past Marks and Spencer's in Chiswick. where a woman was standing in the doorway in a state of kind of high dudgeon. Not distress. High is a good word. Dudgeon. Is that the right word? She's in a state of high dudgeon. Someone look it up. I may have misused it. High dudgeon, I would say. Because a shoplifter had walked out with a basket full of goods. I think it was the fact that they used a basket that had got her dander up so much, because it made it particularly brazen. You know, if you witness someone stashing a salami in their trouser leg, then you at least acknowledge that they know what they're doing is wrong and they are worried about being caught. If you see someone, you know, sliding a wedge of cheddar into their jacket pocket, then you know what I mean. But this person had walked out with, it's like they'd gone shopping, but without the inconvenience of paying for their shopping. They'd browsed, they'd gone up and down the aisle. Oh, I'll just take a little bit of that. Oh, that looks nice. What's the sell by date? I'll take that as well. And then they just walked out the door. And this woman who was, obviously in the middle of her shopping, it was a picture to me. It was almost a poem. Her face and her demeanour, because she was this wonderful combination. I would say 52-48 if it wasn't such an infernal ratio. Can I say that, Keith? Can I say 52-48 today? Oh, I've said it now. It was sort of 52% outrage. No. It was 52% bafflement and 48% moral outrage. So she was juggling, really, between being morally outraged, this person has not paid for their shopping, and utter bafflement that she seemed to be the only person in the area who cared. She said, look, they've just gone, they've taken their shopping out of the shop. And as a member of staff, going, yeah, it's terrible, but we can't get involved. I can't actually remember whether my mate Lawrence was there. He's normally parked outside Marks and Spencer's on this particular stretch of West London, selling the big issue. But I can't actually remember, because I was hypnotised by this woman's curious combination. I told you I was going to hit the junction on time. It's 10:16. Curious combination of outrage and befuddlement. And then almost to the day. I made that up. It could have been 18 months. It could have been 2 years. But I'm a storyteller. Almost to the day. To the hour. I saw two lads in the same branch of Marks and Spencer's move in like American football players on a thief, on a shoplifter, and absolutely clatter him, and then drag him, kicking and screaming, to the back of the shop. And they didn't get fired. I've checked. Nor should they. They were obviously doing their job and doing it rather well. And I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what we want. What do we want people to do? What do we want the staff to do? What do we want members of the public to do? And what do you think you would do? 03456060973 will be the number you need if I ever get around to presenting an actual phone-in.
LBC.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Scoop up the savings this summer with Lidl Plus. Pick up strawberry and chocolate ice cream cones, chocolate almond ice creams, and a mix of exotic and berry fruit ice lollies. Now 20% off with Lidl Plus. So the savings taste even sweeter. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. Selected lines only. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 20th of May.
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind is a bold and uplifting new musical based on the incredible true story of 13-year-old William Kamkwamba, who dared to dream big against impossible odds. Don't miss the West End premiere, playing now at Soho Place for a strictly limited run until the 18th of July. Book now at sohoplace.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 18 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Can you just check Julie's message there? Because I want to read it out as an example of arguably the most dull message I've ever received in the history of this radio programme, which is what happens on a day like today when you're not allowed to talk about the thing you're not allowed to talk about. I remain, however, fascinating by have-a-go heroes, if you like, or shoplifters doing the right thing. 90 minutes after 10 is the time. This is the first response to today's phone-in question. Hi, James. This happened to me. A man slipped a bottle of wine into his pocket and walked out the door. I went to the staff and told them. They went after him, but couldn't find him. End of story. If I'd had your training, Ellen Hoddenar, as a journalist, would I have been able to imbue that tale with a little bit more tension and excitement? Or do you think we were dead in the water from the start?
Well, I find that quite exciting. What? Someone just goes in and grabs a wine bottle and then walks out of the store. It sounds dramatic to me.
But this bit was the bit I was interested in. See if you can imbue this with a bit more drama. They went after him, but couldn't find him.
Well, yeah, the thief got away. That means he got away with the crime.
So they're like that is meerkats high drama. On the high street with their little eyes spinning like periscopes. There's nothing funny about this story. In fact, I'll do my best and almost certainly fail to stay quiet because I'd just like you to tell everybody what has happened to Gary MacArthur, now, sadly, a former Sainsbury's employee.
Yes. Okay. So Gary MacArthur worked at a Sainsbury's store in West Wickham in South London for 15 years and told us how important that role was to him.
The job meant everything for me. It was my heart and soul, really. The community was just my heart. I am more in touch with the older community that came into the store. I'd greet them, I'd hug them, I'd chat with them. We'd laugh, we'd cry sometimes. So there's a real sense of love and loyalty for me and the colleagues and customers.
But then one night in December last year, the shop didn't have a security guard on duty because the guard on shift had suffered a suspected stroke earlier in the day. And Gary had actually helped to give him CPR on the shop floor. The guard was taken into hospital and keenly aware of this surge in shoplifting, which Gary described to us as pure looting. He agreed to stay late that day to help out the all-female staff, to help them feel a bit safer. And that is when a well-known, notorious champagne thief came into the shop and grabbed a bottle. Gary then escorted him out. We're told he took the bottle off him outside the shop, but the thief went back into the shop, started smashing bottles, throwing two in the direction of his manager and another colleague.
From there, he's dropped the bottles, ran down aisle three. I've grabbed his arm. Another customer's grabbed him by his throat and his other arm. Again, with this, I understand. Obviously, the thief's got a bit more aggressive and tried lunging forward. I've grabbed his legs, put him down to the floor with another two other customers at the time holding him down, waiting for the police to come. Police come, give him statements. And that was pretty much the end of that story.
But 3 months...
Paul?
Yes.
I think we glossed over the CPR bit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
Yeah, so
he'd arguably saved the life of a colleague earlier in the day.
Yeah, he said that the guard had come in, he'd looked under the weather, and then next thing they know, he was having this kind of a medical emergency on the shop floor, and Gary was helping out, which can't have been easy, would have been stressful. And then we're told his manager then asked him to stay late in the day, and he agreed after going through the CPR episode.
Just before you carry on, Helen, can you do CPR, Keith? Are you trained in CPR? What's going to happen if I have a medical episode on the program? Eleanor, are you trained in CPR? Are you? Yeah, all right. But after you've put the emergency tape on, who's going to come and rescue me? Well, who's going to be my Gary? Martha, can you do CPR? Or any of... Helen, have you trained?
No, I think you're going to be stuck.
Rebecca, come on. Rebecca can do CPR. Martha's trained in it. Have you ever done it? Have you ever... You've done it in the wild? On a real person? All right, well, it's better than nothing. Carry on, Helen.
So the police come, they give their statements, and Gary thinks that's it, line drawn under the incident. But then, 3 months later, and this was after a previous written warning, which was issued to Gary in August last year about another altercation with a shoplifter. Gary was then dismissed for gross misconduct. At the start of April, he lost his appeal to be reinstated into his role. And in his dismissal letter, which has been seen by LBC, he was told that despite the shoplifter hurling these bottles at his colleagues, Gary could have been a visual deterrent.
my soul is crushed in the sense of it. It's destroyed for the old humanity side of doing the right thing, being the right person. I mean, I've not got a bad bone in my body. I'm not a spiteful or hurtful person. I feel that I do the right thing when the right time is needed. I mean, I don't have much. I mean, the friends that I do have are generally my work colleagues. Apart from that, I mean, what you see here is my life. I've got 5 fish tanks and 2 snakes, and that's pretty much me. The 4 days I'm at work are the best times of my life.
I have known people like this over the years. I worked in retail before I got into journalism, and I remember one bloke who was distraught when he was told he had to retire because he didn't know what he would do. It was literally his life, and he had relationships with regular customers. He had emotional connections with them and with colleagues as well. And so if anyone is struggling to understand the depth of Gary's pain there in that clip, I am not. I mean, it is a relatively commonplace experience that people's only real interactions outside of their home life, especially if they're on their own, obviously, are going to be in their jobs, and they took it all away.
Yeah, and he kind of spoke about just how important those connections were to him, his connections with the kind of older customers who would come in and they would share stories about their day. So when we approached Sainsbury's about Gary's case, a spokesperson said that they are seeing incidents of violence, aggression and theft happening in their stores on a daily basis, threatening the safety of colleagues and customers, saying that's why their guidance to colleagues on how to respond to retail crime prioritises keeping everyone in their stores safe and is specifically, they said, designed to stop incidents from escalating. Gary has told us that he has found a new job, which he will start soon, but he says that he's lost out financially. And of course, he was in that role for 15 years. And that kind of emotional toll that this whole episode has taken on him is really plain to hear.
Can we get the bit ready, the clip ready, where he talks about civic duty? Because I think that's so powerful and important and ties in with what I want to talk about on the programme next. And as you say, Helen, he's got another job. Which is good, but the idea that he should have just left the shoplifter to, he could have stood there being a visual deterrent. I mean, what do we know what that involves?
So being a visual deterrent, I believe that means that they meant that his actions,
hold his arms, perhaps.
I think it meant that he was a visual deterrent to maybe customers.
Just his very presence would put off the serial shoplifter from doing the serial shoplifting that he'd been doing serially as a shoplifter.
Perhaps. Yeah, and this guy is well known as well. He would target this Sainsbury's, he would target their sister store, and his whole thing was going in and grabbing high-end bottles of champagne. So they knew what the deal with him was going to be when this specific situation escalated.
Will you give him our very best? And I mean, maybe we'll collect some of the messages that come in support of him and send them in his direction. If we can do more, we will find out and indeed do it. Helen Holdenut, thank you very much indeed with the latest case. And for my money, actually, the most emotionally affecting yet of a shop worker doing what they believe to be the right thing and ending up being punished for it. And yet, this is not a binary issue. This is not a black and white question. If he had sustained an injury himself, his employer would have been on the hook for all sorts of issues, up to and including being sued, perhaps, by the actual employee. If he'd been concussed or worse, who knows what the problem would be, what the repercussions would be. There's a reason why businesses do this. And, of course, the other element of the conversation is the escalation. The fact that if the champagne thief, and you know, Helen Holdenot said the word champagne with such venom in her voice there, I thought the next word was going to be socialist. Champagne. He takes the champagne and should have been left alone to abscond with it, should have been left alone to leave with it. And he gets punished because He removed him from the shop and he came back angry and started throwing bottles at people. So there is a logic. There's an ineluctable logic to the position of Sainsbury's here. You did the thing that put the customers at risk. If you're shopping at Sainsbury's, you get hit in the head with a flying bottle of Moët Chandon, you're going to come after Sainsbury's with a lawyer, right? You're going to come after Sainsbury's with your purse wide open, and arguably rightly so. So they, you're dealing with relatively, it's not a word I like using about human beings, but it is a word that sometimes applies. Not a person, but a behaviour. You're dealing with relatively feral behaviour in these moments. And so Sainsbury's say, if you hadn't done what you did, the customers wouldn't have been at risk, the other staff members wouldn't have been at risk, and you wouldn't have been at risk. And we warned you last time you did this. So this time, I'm afraid it's sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap time. I've already asked you the questions that I want you to answer this hour. I'll remind you of them after the very latest headlines. But another one I'd like to add to the list. So elsewhere in the interview, Gary talks about it being his civic duty. And it was that word that really, really hit me. The idea that it is his civic duty to do this. If you're like him, like Gary, or indeed as a member of the public, if you are like the taxi driver that I had the other day, that if you see something like this going on, you actually, and this isn't necessarily a good thing, you can't control yourself, such as your what? What word would you use? Is it outrage? Is it anger? Is it dudgeon? High dudgeon? Because I don't know whether or not you should be trying to talk yourself down from the position that you, and in the case of the taxi driver I'm talking about, his wife, really, really worry that will lead them into trouble. I hope now at 10:30 you can see why I am, I mean, genuinely obsessed with this issue and these recurring stories. Because the bit I missed was that the second time in Marks and Spencer's, when I saw two members of staff manhandle the shoplifter, the serial shoplifter, to the back of the store, it was a moment of shock, because I'd done all these glib phone-ins about, oh, well, they should do more, or they should have a go, would you have a go? Done all these glib phone-ins, that very comfortable middle-class existence when you never encounter genuine violence. That's not actually a very clever thing for me to say, because domestic violence is just as likely to happen in a middle-class household as it is anywhere else. My life does not involve encountering violence. So when you encounter it in the raw, in the wild, in the visceral, it's very, very shocking. Even something as relatively commonplace as a shoplifter being. But it reminded me of the physicality of the person doing the cautioning, the person doing the subduing. And it's really stayed with me, because I think the question of what should you do, what would you do, what did you do, is a million times more complicated than most of the coverage allows. So pick a question. Give me a call and answer it. It is 10:31. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Health authorities say two British people are self-isolating in the UK after being potentially exposed to hantavirus. Officials say the pair left a cruise ship hit by the outbreak last month, but insist the risk to the wider public is low. Train services across southern England are being disrupted by a fault with the radio system. National Rail says passengers should expect delays and cancellations until the end of today. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. LBC weather, showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, cloudy elsewhere. A high of 15 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Scoop up the savings this summer with Lidl Plus. Pick up strawberry and chocolate ice cream cones, chocolate almond ice creams, and a mix of exotic and berry fruit ice lollies. Now 20% off with Lidl Plus, so the savings taste even sweeter. Lidl, more to value.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. Selected lines only. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 20th of May.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:34 is the time, so it's entirely my fault, but I don't really want to conduct a phone in about people who have had a go, because I've done it before. It's the same phone call 10 times in a row. What I'm really interested in is whether or not the company actually has any choice in these moments, because, you know, if there's been a warning and the policy is that you don't escalate the situation and then you do it again, what is the company supposed to do? Employ more and better security guards, have better policies, be more concerned about, but they're absorbing the losses and still paying out huge dividends to their shareholders. I'm not getting all Marxist on you. I just worry that I've gone from handling it in a really binary and un-nuanced way to swinging, rather than swinging towards, a better way of handling it, I've gone a little bit dewy-eyed and hero-worshipy of people like Gary, because this man is obviously an absolute mensch. I mean, a sweet man with a proper sense of duty. And so my instincts, my impulse, my emotional response to this story is to champion him and to defend him and to attack Sainsbury's. But my head, my brain has to stop sometimes and say, hang on. Do they actually have it? So we all agree he's a hero. But that doesn't mean Sainsbury's were wrong to say, you've had your warnings, you've had, oh, I hate this story. And they're going to hate it even more when you hear, I should warn you, a slightly tearful Gary describing the sort of impulses that I'm trying to examine with you this morning.
This day and age, there is no civic duty. I've even had MPs email me saying, you know, sorry about what's happened to you. There's no justice anymore. And for me, my soul is crushed in the sense of it. It's destroyed for the old humanity side of what certain or should most people believe in the sense of doing the right thing, being the right person.
Theft. I mean, it's a cradle lesson. It's a lesson in the cradle theft, isn't it? It's one of the first things you're taught. I don't know what your introduction to it was. You sort of slipped a Milky Way into your pocket in the local newsagents. Your mum found out and marched you back to the newsagents to apologise to the shop owner and return the Milky Way. No idea where that anecdote came from. But it is drilled into you from a very early age. And some of us don't learn the lesson. Some of us do. Happily and thankfully, albeit a little bit too late in some cases, including mine when it came to shoplifting. I've told you that story before. But it's there in his DNA almost. But if the company policy is to say, don't do anything that increases the likelihood of violence, and you do something that only increases the likelihood of violence but causes major violence, and you've been previously warned, it's a horrible one. Beginning to wish I'd never done it. Jenny's in Berkhamsted. Jenny, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, there's two elements to this.
Is that
one
all?
About security? First, civic duty.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't step in.
No.
I'm quite a slight...
But I don't think that matters. I think there should be... I don't want every muscle-bound hunk listening to this programme to think that they should step in, because it's not a question of capability. It's a question of correctness. And I don't think it is necessarily the correct thing to do. Sainsbury's aren't going to thank you. What are they going to do? Give you a bottle of bubbly and send you on your way? They're not going to give you a tranche of shares, are they? Or a cheque for £5 million. Carry on.
Absolutely not. So if I saw it, I would alert the security guards. But we've got to empower the security guards. And I don't think they're empowered enough. there needs to be a lot of training on how to tackle and detain an offender, you know, because otherwise, you know, they're going to wade into litigation laws, and this is why the supermarket.
I'm not so worried about that. I don't hear that. I mean, it's not that necessarily. It would be more things like people actually getting injured and insurance claims kicking in, or health and safety claims for the employee who got hurt doing something they weren't supposed to do. And the defence would be, well, we told them not to do it, so we're not liable for anything. And they say, yeah, but you warned him last December and he carried on doing it. So you are actually liable for his injuries because you didn't sack him.
And also it works the other way. If a security guard that isn't properly trained and takes down an offender, I think there's something called the thin skull rule. I haven't read Hansard for about 20 years.
I mentioned this in the introduction, where you could be on the hook for you know, manslaughter or worse if you are deliberately expending violence, and the consequences are entirely unintended but tragic. I think this is it. I think it is head heart. Heart says give Gary a knighthood. Head says they had to sack him. And I can hold both of those thoughts in my head at the same time. It's cognitive dissonance. I'm not going to mention the supermarket that you used to work for, Roddy, because I think I could. I think I'd be within my rights to do so. But it just seems unnecessarily problematic. Hi, James. I work with... training is specific to avoid interaction in such circumstances. Security guards have the same guidance. Part of our training used to include offering a potential shoplifter a basket as a deterrent. It's a fear of lawsuits all round. I had to read that twice. Because if I was a Daily Mail journalist, or if I was Dick Littlejohn, I'd now be going, oh, and now they give shoplifters baskets. Oh, the country's gone to the dogs. We're all going to hell in a handcart. But, of course, if you go up to someone who you know is a shoplifter and you give them a basket, what you're saying is, I've clocked you, pal. I can see you, Jimmy. And so don't you be thinking about nicking anything, because hello, can I offer you a basket? You seem to be walking around the shop with an enormous coat with gigantic pockets. We have baskets available, sir. Would you like, so it's actually quite a clever thing to do, but I had to read it twice before I understood. Big retailers, and this is the thing we arrived at a few weeks ago, should be financing more effective security, and the law should support policing, both in-store and empower police to act. That's what customers wish to see happen. How many times have I said to you that the big businesses won't do anything unless they are legally compelled to, or unless it costs them more money to do nothing than it does to do something? You call me a communist. But you take that and stick it on a T-shirt. They will never do anything until it costs them more money to do nothing than it does to do something. And that's why they're doing next to nothing. Take it to the bridge. Pete's in Carlisle. Pete, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Yeah, I want to draw a comparison between what the security guards in supermarkets can do with the sort of door people and bouncers on pubs and nightclubs. Because they seem to be a bit more empowered. So they're trained as well.
I mean, they've got licenses and everything, haven't they?
Exactly. So why can't the supermarkets do the same?
I've just told you.
But this idea of visual deterrence...
Nightclubs have to do it. Nightclub managements are legally obliged to hire licensed doormen. Supermarkets are not. So they're not going to do it voluntarily until it costs them more money to do nothing than it does to do something.
But coming back to Gary's point of this civic duty, surely the big players have a civic duty to, A, protect the public, protect their employees, and protect their shoppers. And
Well, they don't, do they? They have a shareholder duty to protect their profits, first, last, and always. Not the individual managements and members of staff, but these are not cooperatives or convents. These are organisations, as Hetty O'Brien was explaining to us earlier this week, often not necessarily, not in the case of the supermarkets, but venture capital. It has almost everything by the short and curlies in this country, and they exist only to maximise and harvest profits. So they're not going to spend money on anything, mate, unless they are legally obliged to.
Well, let's make that happen then, as you say, pubs
don't mention politics.
Are legally obliged to do
it. So that's what the real story is. So I worry that we, for the best of reasons, we almost turn people like Gary into martyrs for the wrong cause.
Indeed.
It's not about don't sack the people having a go. It's about hire the people to do the job so that Gary doesn't bloody have to.
Exactly. Give the guy his job back, give him a bonus and pat him on the back and tell him he's doing right. And
I don't think they can do that because of the warning letter that he got earlier, late last year, you know.
Well, they can reverse that. They can reverse
I know they can, but it's a company policy. If the law doesn't change, Pete, are you turning me into the blooming schoolmaster now? But if the law doesn't change, the company has little choice. Unless it decides to voluntarily sacrifice profit on the altar of stock protection. Because at the moment, it clearly costs them less to wave sayonara to the Moët et Chandon or the Veuve Clicquot, my personal favourite, in case you're wondering what to get me at Christmas, to wave goodbye to the champagne, because it will cost them less to absorb that than it would to actually fund the kind of security operation that you see on the door of every nightclub in the country and many, many pubs. And the pubs that do it, I actually don't know whether they are legally obliged to because of licensing regulations or because they've had a little bit of trouble, or whether they have calculated that it is financially wise for them to have a door policy strictly enforced, because if they don't, fewer people come to the pub, it's more likely to kick off, it's a nastier atmosphere, and therefore the profits are still being prioritised. 10:44 is the time, coming up to 10:45. I had a brilliant missing word round for you today, but I think Nick Ferrari might have ruined it for me. You can only really play the missing word round if you weren't listening to Nick Ferrari's program earlier. But don't worry, because I've got a second one for you that everybody will be able to play. And it's the first time ever we've had a sort of double header. So it's the same. I'll explain more after this.
This is LBC.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Ronseal 5-litre Shed and Fence Protector. Was £10, now £8. Shop today. Terms apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Now with Lidl Plus, collect points that you can turn into possibilities. Pepper abilities. Ooh. Pasta abilities. Burrata abilities. Kayak abilities. So collect and spend your Lidl Plus points on hundreds of rewards or money off coupons. Lidl, more to value. Exclusions apply. For T's and C's, lidl.co.uk/LPTV 18 plus GB only.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with 3 levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:47. I possibly misspoke a moment ago. There's certainly licensing necessary for security guards in stores as well. I don't currently know whether it is as rigorous or what's the word that I'm looking for? If it involves as much training as it does for doormen on nightclubs and things like that, I just would have presumed they were slightly different propositions. But we shall double check. 10:48 is the time. Speaking of things that you're texting me, you've made me chuckle today. This came in while Gary was talking. while we were playing out the tape, and it made me chuckle, but I didn't want to introduce the levity until we'd got to the emotional core of the story, so I didn't read it out at the time. But Garen was listening to that interview conducted with Gary MacArthur, the sacked Sainsbury's employee, and he texted the programme to say, when did David Beckham get a job at Sainsbury's? I was trying to put my finger on who he sounded like, and you beat me to it. And I just want to reassure Matt, he did not say that he lives with five fish cakes and two snakes. He said five fish tanks and two snakes. Because let's be honest, if you've got two snakes, five fish cakes aren't going to last very long, are they? Wesley's in Bristol. Wesley, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Wesley.
So I'm a security trainer. I train and teach security officers and personnel how to do their job.
Okay.
And that is the legal parameters all the way up to, I mean, I work in the NHS, so all the way up to chemical restraint.
Gosh.
Now, what you're saying and what you're alluding to about the SIA, Security Industries Association requirements,
yeah.
The badge is the same, as in it registers you to be a security operative.
Okay.
But there are some restraint differences between nightclub,
yes,
and between working in a supermarket. And rightly so, because you deal with very different things.
Yes.
The big issue is policy, right? It's not necessarily that we work under the law in security. We work under employers' policy.
Yes.
And that's really important, because in order for a supermarket to give more power to security personnel, which I sort of think they should if they're trained properly,
yes,
which is obviously the bit that you alluded to, they don't want to pay for it.
Yes.
But if they do give them that, what we've got then, mate, is you've got your security officer, who's a hero, who wants to stop the 14-year-old nicking 10p sweets the same way you would stop your people running out with trolleys full of kit.
He thinks he does an impression of a gladiator with a pugil stick, and sends the 14-year-old halfway across the supermarket before he's even had a chance to say sorry.
Well, you've got the old, Section 3, Criminal Law Act, I can put my hands on someone, common law, I can use restraint for this.
Yeah.
And you can, yes, you can. However, aesthetically, do you want a 15-year-old screaming and begging for their mum when they're being pinned down because they've nicked a lollipop?
No.
Or do you really want the three guys who are in there with trolleys running out with TVs being stopped? And this is where supermarkets are quite smart, because they know, unfortunately, we are our own worst corporates in the security industry. We know we've got the people who either are not educated enough to differentiate, or they've had a quiet week, nothing's happened, this happens, oh, quick, jump up, let's respond to this. And
so it's a mess. It's a mess. Why does it feel, Wesley, like it's much more of a mess now than it did, for example, 15 years ago?
The advent of CCTV and mobile phones, James. So
tell me more.
Back in the day, people were responding to instances and everything was hidden. Now everyone's being recorded while they're doing what they're doing. So they're acting perfectly within their rights. But when you've got somebody screaming and shouting at you saying, you're molesting me, you're hurting me, you're abusing me, and somebody's recording it with no context, of course, the old tope of like, of course the security officer or the doorman's doing that. That's what they do. So it comes down to perception.
Yes.
Old school perception.
That's interesting.
Plus now the advent of obviously lots of evidence. But I think what it comes down to, mate, we have to take responsibility within the industry of A, training people properly. And there's some very, very good trainers out there.
Oh, clearly.
Myself included,
absolutely,
obviously.
Absolutely right, yeah. We're on the right show if you want to toot your own trumpet, mate.
But there's lots of very, very good trainers out there, and everybody can source them out. However, what happens is there's a requirement to fill your contract. If you need six door staff, if you need four SIA registered security staff to run a festival or etc., people are so needed to fill that gap that anyone gets hired. And then your strict requirement where, no, I need the person whose standard is of this height, goes out the window. Now, I work in the NHS, and the requirement to do my job where I work, I won't tell you which hospital, but where I work, they allowed me to fully develop the training course. So it was outsourced. That's now gone. And it's somebody who actually does the job and has been a trainer in the industry for years. I now get to teach my team specifically so that I know, hang on, that's not appropriate. This isn't right. And we mentor our guys up through then, you know. We don't get to do that for Sainsbury's or Waitrose, etc., because the turnover of staff is just too high.
And it wouldn't be if they were paid more and trained better.
Well, security should be a vocation, because it's
they've just sacked a bloke with a vocation, haven't they? I know that Gary wasn't in security, but it's a funny word to use for some people in the context of retail. But you listen to Gary talking about his emotional relationship with his job, and it's a vocation. He wants to be doing that job. And security can be the same. You speak about your job with passion.
Oh, James, I love my job. I've got a degree. I don't need to work in security, but what you get in security is, especially where I work now in a hospital, my ability to help and assist people and also change people's opinions of security and security officers. I absolutely love what I do.
This is civic duty again, isn't it? And so it's in the eye of the beholder in a way. Your civic duty is being exercised entirely with the parameters of both the law and your employer's policy. And Gary's civic duty was exercised within the law, but outside of the parameters of his employer's policy. So although you both sound similarly committed to your work and your cause, these are different examples. If you had got told off last year for doing something that the company didn't want you to do, in your case the NHS, and then you did it again, you would probably expect your sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap.
Well, this happens, and so we're not allowed to use any pain compliance in our role. It's perfectly legal to use pain compliance. We use handcuffs. I carry handcuffs. We're not allowed to use it. So what I don't do, James, is I don't ever use pain compliance.
What's that exactly? You hurt me until I surrender.
Well, no. So if I'm trying to get handcuffs on you and you were saying resisting or you had a weapon in your hand, it's, say, a manipulation of a joint to get you to give me your arm. The police use it all the time.
That's pain compliance, is it? I understand.
It's not you do this or I'll hurt you. It's I need to...
I am hurting you because this is the best way in which I can get to the point that I need to get
stop,
to.
Yeah, if you stop, I'll stop sort of thing, But so I don't ever use it because I'm not allowed to use it. And unfortunately for Gary, as much as I feel for him, we have to have this line in order to clean up the industry of, guys, forget what the law says. Read your policies, read your procedures, stick to them. And if it means that people run out the store, you can say, guys, I'm sorry, I'm not going to put my hands on there because of this.
And this was going to be the other phone-in, actually, which was about the people who can't help themselves and whether or not we're actually doing them any favours by sort of lauding them and praising them. It might be better to try to do what you're trying to do, which is to really drive home what is and what is not permitted, whether you're a taxi driver or whether you're a non-security member of supermarket staff. You really need to understand what is and what is not permitted. With a side order of, come on supermarket, sacrifice small slices of your enormous profits to make sure that everybody is safe from stealing in the shops where they are handing over their hard-earned cash.
Exactly, and we can't criticise our politicians or our radio DJs and stuff if they step outside of their boundaries, but then praise the people who we think are being heroic. Oh, I mean, crikey. I just did a breakdown of the Golders Green. I did a video on YouTube, a breakdown of the use of force and how I thought the police responded because...
Don't say anything else. I don't say anything else about, because I know that could lead us into political territory, and I just let you get to the end of that bit of the sentence, and that's absolutely fine. But I'm paranoid. And that is a better thing to be than not paranoid, because oddly enough, as Wesley said, if radio presenters transgress, they do get punished. And there was a radio presenter on this radio station many years ago who did transgress on a day like today, and he did get punished. And he looked quite remarkably like me. Thank you, Wesley. Riz is in Crumlin. Riz, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, morning, James. I just felt a bit compelled to ring in. I mean, I heard you say earlier, sorry, that you didn't want to hear from Have A Go Heroes.
No, I didn't. But, I said I didn't want to hear from Have A Go Heroes, but I am prepared to take one story. Because I know you've been on hold for the best part of the hour, so what I could have done, Riz, you picked up the phone before I'd even drawn breath, and a whole switchboard was full of people getting ready to tell me about the time they had a go.
Yeah,
and I had to say to Rebecca in the break, I don't want caller after caller after caller telling me how brave they are, but I'll take the one you like the most out of all of them. Otherwise, clear the switchboard, and you were the one that was left.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was going to put it down thinking, oh, he does want to hear from me, but well, now that I'm talking to you,
yes.
I'll briefly tell you my story. I mean, it was not so long ago. It was during the month of Ramadan, actually. I was coming back from the mosque. So I felt all calm and peaceful.
I thought you were going to say hungry then.
Well, no, they fed me at the mosque. I wasn't, certainly wasn't hungry.
So it was quite late then?
It was late, actually, right, yeah. Well. I just popped in to pick up, you know, as you do, a pint of milk and a bread, the missus had said, pick that up on your way home. So I did, and I walked into that pandemonium. Sorry, I can never say that word. Pandemonium, yeah.
Pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
Chaos.
And, so as I walked in, there was a screaming everywhere. I picked up my basket, and women were screaming, and all I could see on the floor was the security guard. Basically, there was a shoplifter on top of him, punching him, who clearly had the better of the security guard. He wasn't old. He's probably my age. I'm 57 on Sunday, but he was a bit older than me. And he looked like he was in, you know, obviously real danger. So I thought, well, do I walk past and ignore it, or do I get involved? And I've seen all the women screaming. I thought, I can't just leave it. So basically, I pulled him off, and he went for me then, the shoplifter. He started attacking me. Luckily, I'm not the smallest of fellows. I did a lot of kickboxing. I can look after myself. I held him at bay to try and avoid him from, you know, getting contact with me. But
did you roundhouse him in the head?
Well, I didn't roundhouse him, but I did hit him. Yeah, that would have looked good on CCTV, but I thought, no, because he kept throwing punches at me. I did hit him, right. And he did go down. But the long and short of it was, I just couldn't walk past the security guard.
How conscious was your behaviour?
You know what? It was a weird one. I don't think I even thought, because I think in times like that, you don't really have... I didn't really do an analysis.
But if you'd done him a serious injury, you'd be in all sorts of trouble, you see.
Well, see, you're not wrong. And the thing that I thought of afterwards, I'm an optician by profession, so I'm in a professional job. Now, these things... they can have repercussions.
Of course,
you know?
You end up in the local paper. I don't want to get mine. I don't want my eyes tested by that kickboxer over there.
Exactly. And luckily, I don't do any of it doing while I'm conducting an eye test.
Well, it'd be a bit weird if you did, mate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, make an interesting eye exam, wouldn't it, for sure?
I'll tell you what, if I was in your chair and I was doing an eye test and you started doing some kickboxing in the corner, do you know what I'd say?
What's that?
I'd say, I don't believe my eyes, Rich.
I can't believe my eyes.
So everything came off nicely. Was the shoplifter detained?
You know what, I did actually have to leave. I gave the security guard my telephone number to look if the police want to contact me. And I think he did leave, but he was a known shoplifter.
This is the point, isn't it? It's the company should really have better policies in place. And I am going to discourage you from doing that again because I am. I bet your wife was unhappy as well, wasn't she?
She wasn't pleased, but then when I explained to her, look, I can't see a person just getting pummeled.
Well, that's a different dimension. Yeah. You're not outraged by the theft. You're actually outraged and concerned by the threat being posed to the person on the floor. Actually, that's a completely... you're right. I mean, it's the last call of the hour and you've added a completely different dimension to the discussion. But this from Lee, who has had significant experience in the use of legal force, including training people to use force at a very high level, private security, police and forces on occasion. And he writes, while I know what I would do in the situations discussed, I would never advise any shop worker or member of the public to get physically involved. The vast majority of the population, thankfully, never have to deal with physical violence, including almost all of those calling for more action from staff. Completely agree with that, but it's far more difficult, dangerous and traumatic, that's the word I keep coming back to, than anyone can predict. And even highly trained staff are regularly injured, occasionally even killed, when a target has an unexpected weapon or skill or just lands a lucky blow. Shop staff and the public should be discouraged in every way from getting involved in violence. However, large stores can afford to have security that is trained for such encounters, and only those with full training and, as such, full understanding for the situation they are putting themselves into should get involved. And that, I think, is the end of the conversation, or at least for now.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the UK Health Security Agency has told LBC British people returning from a cruise ship hit by hantavirus will be asked to self-isolate at home. Two people are already doing so after making their way home before the outbreak was known about. Officials insist the risk to the wider public remains very low. Chief Scientific Officer Professor Robin May spoke to LBC earlier today.
We have two passengers who'd left the cruise ship prior to this outbreak. As people who've been on cruises will know, so people come and go all the time. They'd arrived back in the UK, and when they became aware of this, they reached out to us to contact us, actually, which we're very pleased with. They are now voluntarily self-isolating at home. We have a number of passengers still on the ship, obviously, who are all healthy as far as we can tell. They'll be repatriated in the coming days, and they also will then go through a period of self-isolation.
Train services across southern England are being seriously disrupted this morning by a fault with a radio system. Seven companies, including Southern, Southwestern and Great Western Railway, are affected. Passengers are being urged to check before travelling and to expect delays and cancellations for the rest of the day. President Trump has predicted the war in Iran will be over quickly after holding what he described as very good talks. Iran says it is reviewing a new proposal, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. Defence and security analyst Professor Michael Clark says he believes that the White House is looking for an off-ramp.
President Trump feels boxed in, and this summit he's going to in China next week, I think, looms large. He didn't want to go with this thing unresolved. It looks as if he's just decided he's got to fold. I think we've arrived at the point where the United States is desperate to get out and is looking for a way out.
The US Secretary of State has arrived in Rome for talks with Pope Leo. Marco Rubio is on a mission to repair relations between Washington and the Vatican after the US President's repeated verbal attacks on the pontiff. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. Polling station close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 69 points at 10,369. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather. Showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for the east and south. Cloudy elsewhere. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
£11.05, that's Guy Gomer, minus 25. Guy Gomer, star of the, my favourite moment in the history of British television. Oh, could we do that? Eleanor, should we do that? A favourite moment in the history of British television? I don't think, like, biggest mistake you've made at work, because that's... Thank you, Keith. Is that your entrance, the biggest mistake that you've ever made at work, or are you mocking the pedestrian nature of the producer-presenter relationship? Just talk among yourselves. No, we'll carry on with the original plan, I think. I can't do... It's not North Norfolk Digital. I can't do best moments in television history. You've got the elephant that pooed. You've got Del Boy falling through the bar on Only Fools and Horses. Something David Attenborough, something, something, happy birthday. And then you've got Guy Gomer, who's going to be with us live at 11:30. So, no, I think it would be disrespectful to Guy Gomer to pretend that there was any competition about what was the finest moment ever in the history of... Okay, thank you. It's 6 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to a story that I am going to struggle to properly introduce. Okay, and by the way, I wasn't being glib there. We very, very nearly did do Why Is David Attenborough So Wonderful? That was the clue, because there are reasons why today's topic selection may seem a little strange to you, but we're not allowed to talk about that thing until tomorrow. And David Attenborough's almost unique status is something that I find quite easy to understand but quite difficult to articulate. So we were thinking about... trying to articulate it. But then this story caught my eye. And do you know that phrase, smug married? You come across that. You don't hear it much when you get to my age. But when it's sort of when you're of an age where your friends have started getting married and some of your friends haven't, there is a danger that some of the ones who have got married start getting a little bit... What would the word be? A little bit superior, a little bit up themselves. And, oh, yes, well, of course, you're... Well, of course. I think it gets worse when you have children and you've still got
friends who haven't got children or who don't want children, and you find yourself saying things like, well, it's different when, well, I can tell you haven't got children. I think I said it yesterday, actually, to a colleague when we were preparing to talk about the Ryanair bloke's call for booze to be banned from airports before normal opening time to stop pubs at airports selling booze. And Elliot, who was producing the show yesterday, was saying, oh, I do like an early pint. Oh, I said I wasn't going to betray his off-air proclivities. I do quite like an early pint when I get to the airport. And I said, oh, well, I can tell you haven't got children. I guess I sometimes become that person. But a smug married is the equivalent, isn't it? It's as if the world is, sometimes it's as if you think you're the first person in history to get married. No one's ever got married. Oh, no, you don't know what it's like to be married. Well, I think quite a lot of people do, actually. And you're not the first person in history to get married. So I don't think that what I'm about to do counts as being smug married, because I'm not smug. I'm inexpressibly grateful for my marriage. And I have to tell you this because I haven't ever, in 26 years of marriage, and I'm not even going to pretend to be funny and say, oh, I'm sure Mrs. O'Brien has. I don't think either of us, in 26 years of marriage, have ever given a moment's thought to getting divorced. It's not all luck. Some of it involves, you know, hard work and effort and compromise and kindness. But in 26 years of marriage, I'm going to get emotional now. We celebrated our 26th wedding anniversary this week, and I thank my lucky stars every single day that that woman came into my life, because I have absolutely no idea what sort of mess I'd have got into if she hadn't. And that's why I find stories like the one I'm about to talk to you about quite hard to get into and almost impossible to believe. I don't find divorce impossible to believe. I'm fascinated by how high the bar is set sometimes for a divorce, particularly for late life divorce, particularly for, you know, the children have left home and you've suddenly got a lot more time on your hands with each other. And it turns out that you don't enjoy that time together as much as you expected to, or as much as you used to, or as much as you thought that you would. And this is the moment, according to some research published today, when you decide that it might actually be quite nice to part company. And those of us who haven't had any personal experience of divorce, I've got friends who've divorced, obviously, and my parents' generation, some of my parents' friends got divorced as well, but my parents did not get divorced, and I have not got divorced, and I don't know. It must be a spectrum, right? So, you know, at one extreme, you've got violence, and then you come down a notch to infidelity, serial infidelity, lying. You've got all of these appalling transgressions, which won't guarantee divorce, of course. Some people will stay together through experiences that they probably shouldn't. And then right at the other end, what's at the other end? What's here? So if you put violence and or infidelity here, like the worst of betrayals, I don't want to include violence in this because it's different from absolutely everything else, but it has to be there, right? So here you have got the worst of betrayals and the worst of behaviours. That's the reason you're getting divorced. I can't stay with her. I can't stay with him because... And that's there, right? So that's quite easy to map. Violence, betrayal, infidelity, stealing, lying, a house got repossessed and I didn't even realise that we were in debt. You know, all of that kind of epic, epic betrayal and utterly, utterly appalling behaviour. What's here? What's the least traumatic experience that could actually lead to a divorce? Do people get divorced because they've just got a bit bored? So the children have left home. No one's done anything wrong. There's no betrayal in place. There's no particular desire to have a relationship with anybody else. But you sort of wake up one morning, or you're sitting in front of the telly and you look across the room at him or her and you think, I don't want to do this for the next 20 years. There's got to be more to life than this. Do people get divorced because they're bored? Am I sounding stupid even asking that question? Because I haven't got a clue. Am I sounding stupid? Do people get divorced? In your 50s and 60s, I'm just a bit bored. I'm going to get divorced. That's the first question, actually, for this phone. And I love these phones because I've never got any idea what questions are going to pop out at the end of them. Did you get divorced just because you were bored? That must be really hard to be the one to pull the wire, to be the one to pull the string, to hit the button. And the other partner's just looking at you going, but we've always been like this. And you go, exactly. Because this story is about raising the children. You've almost paid off the mortgage. You're in your 50s. You should be relaxing and enjoying some well-earned time together. But in fact, according to this survey, half of couples in that category are thinking about a divorce, while one in three say they would crack on and seek a divorce if it wasn't for the financial cost. If it wasn't for the financial cost. And that struck me originally as a very sad story. Because I had this idea of you living in abject misery. Imprisoned, if you like, by the financial situation, by, for example, the fact that if you sold the family home and had to buy two new homes, you'd be living in massively reduced circumstances from those to which you had become accustomed. But then I started thinking about just that simple question of boredom. I always think of divorce, when you're not from a background that includes divorce, as involving really bad behaviour. But it doesn't, does it? So in fact, now you're just thinking, do you know what? I would actually quite like to get divorced, but we can't afford it, so we won't. And you'll just carry on being a bit bored. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't keep you awake at night. You're not gnashing your teeth and tearing your hair out. But if you could afford it, you would get divorced. What's that like? 0345 6060 973. I want this conversation to be serious. I don't know if I've got... I can't really say this. We're having quite a light-hearted show. But I don't sort of necessarily want self-appointed comedians contributing to this one, if you know what I mean, because I think it's a really serious matter. And I want to know two things. I want to know if you did get divorced for relatively low-level reasons. There's just two types of people in the world, isn't there? There are people that have been there and people who haven't. So you've got this idea in your head. I've got this idea in my head of... adultery, theft, dishonesty, violence, all these appalling things you do that end a marriage. But a marriage can end not with a bang, but with a whimper, can't it? It can just sort of peter out. And increasingly, we live in a society where you don't feel bound by disapproval of your neighbours or your parents or social mores. And that's got to be a good thing. You don't want people staying in miserable marriages because they're worried about what the neighbours would say. But I'm thinking about a marriage that isn't necessarily miserable, but which you would probably call time on if you could afford to. So it's a big ask, I know, because, of course, your husband or wife might not know that you feel this way. But don't worry, nobody's listening. Are you staying in... Would you leave your marriage tomorrow if you had more money? 0345 6060 973. And alongside that, did you leave your marriage for relatively mild reasons, not for another lover, not for betrayal, reasons of betrayal or Ten Commandments stuff, but you left your marriage because you just got a bit bored? And how do you feel about that now? I hope you'll join me in this conversation, because and that's why I've put my cards on the table from the start. If it makes me smug, then I'm smug and I'm sorry, because I do find it absolutely fascinating. And I do always love finding out what the world looks like through other people's windows. You know I do. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need if you would actually at least contemplate and quite possibly conduct a divorce if you had a little bit more money between you, and or almost confounding that cliche that I have in my head of divorces being explosions. Divorces are caused by explosions. But what about the ones that are not caused by bangs, if you pardon the pun, but by whimpers? What's that like? And do you look back and think, I did do the right thing? Because for those of us on the outside of this story, I'm kind of thinking, it's a bit grass is greener, that, isn't it? you look back and think, well, you know, maybe we should have just gone out a bit more. Get divorced because you're bored. Isn't that quite easy to fix? Or am I sounding unthoughtful now? I don't know. I really liked this heading, this headline here. One in three would get divorced if it wasn't for the cost. But actually, I don't like it at all. Because it speaks of unhappiness being endemic in our society. But I'm imagining marriages that are not necessarily unhappy. And the only word I can come up with is bored. Is it worth calling time on a marriage because of boredom? And you can answer that question from either side of the threshold, of course. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. It's 11:18.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Find your spirit with the 5-star multi-award-winning My Neighbour Totoro, on stage in the West End. Take a magical journey into the forest as Joe Hisaishi and the Royal Shakespeare Company bring Studio Ghibli's classic animated movie to life. The puppetry is awe-inspiring, raves Time Out, while the Metro describes it as jaw-dropping. My Neighbour Totoro. See him in London's West End now. Book today at totoroshow.com.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free test today at bootshearingcare.com and take advantage of our interest-free payment plans. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply.
Do you?
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 11. It's a conscious uncoupling is probably the fancy pants way of saying you just got a little bit bored. We can afford to go our separate ways. We thought we were in it for the long haul. We've reached the end of our rainbow. No hatred, no particular bitterness. I always find it hard to believe that something is... In fact, that would be another question to add to the list. Is it ever 100% mutual? You always think that whoever broaches the subject first is keener on the idea than the person with whom the subject is being broached. But the idea of... not wanting to be with your partner, but having to stay because of finances is I don't know how sad it is. I want you to tell me. And of course, I am dealing, as a few of you have pointed out, with the very real risk of you wanting to tell me, but not wanting to tell me, because the person with whom you would rather not be living is actually possibly likely to be listening, or someone who would recognise your voice is listening. Tess puts it best. Have you considered that no one is going to call in just in case their significant other is listening to the show? And their voice is recognised, and then they know that they're thinking about divorcing them, yes, I have considered that, but, you know, I always back myself in these moments. You should know that by now. For example, you could do what this texter has done. Don't use my name, they say. If we had more money, I wouldn't get divorced, but we could definitely make things much more fun and interesting. It's the limited income which makes things dull in retirement, something that Matt in Northampton picks up on. It's not boredom. It's growing apart. Not spending time on each other means that you drift apart. But the message that really nailed it, which I've managed to somehow... Look, here it is. I'm not even going to say your name. I'm there, James. We can barely get by with all the rent and the bills. How could it be possible to afford two houses with shared childcare? So we just plod on with things as they are and with little happiness. And now I'm back to thinking this is a really sad picture that you paint. 22 minutes after 11 is the time. Michelle's in Salisbury. Michelle, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello, Michelle.
I absolutely adore you. I listen to you daily.
That's very kind.
I feel like this is a tiny little bit more complex than the kind of way that you've painted it so far. So
I am absolutely certain of it, Michelle.
So, yes, boredom is, you know, but actually, so I'm divorced. I was married for 12 years. I've been divorced for 7. I'm still getting it in the ear. But aside from that, basically...
You mean your ex-husband is still angry?
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got children, you see.
Of course.
And this is one of the massive barriers to people getting divorced. They've got children, often young children. Oh, my goodness, we can't leave. But when I said to my family and friends, and it took me years to actually get to the point of actually doing it, and I had a lot of my male friends come up to me and go, oh, my God, you're so brave. We're not having a great time.
Yeah.
And then I had other female friends too saying, oh, God. And I realised, I calculated it, about 75% of my friends weren't happy in their marriages.
But I mean, I think that marriages are probably under the highest amounts of stress when children are young.
Oh, yeah, I agree, but you see...
So there might have been light at the end of all of those tunnels. There might even have been light at the end of your tunnel, Michelle.
No. Because I recognised when I married this person that he wasn't going to be the dad I thought he'd be, even though he already had a child. He wasn't going to love me the way I expected to be loved, unconditionally. I didn't feed the baby in a certain way. Why aren't you doing that? All of this came out afterwards, but it really made me realise, hang on, I was a breadwinner. I worked for the civil service. I had the money. And as soon as I said, I can't deal with this anymore, I'd rather be alone. And then it
horrid. That's a really important moment. Because most people, I think, would balk at the idea of, I'd rather be alone. I presume a lot of divorces are caused when people already have their next partner in place, you know. But I'd rather be alone. That's a terrible thing to hear.
That's not true. You realise that you're not friends anymore.
Oh.
As soon as you break up a friendship like that, there's no way to come back from it because all the trust, all the years, it's gone. And it's not about cheating or anything. None of that happened. I just realised... he's not my friend. I don't actually like him. And he doesn't actually like me. But we had 2 young kids, and financially, yeah, it was awful. And he tore me through the courts in every possible way. Obviously, I won every time, but...
Sure.
It was just to make sure that I was feeling awful because I had dared to leave him,
It's a bit like looking over a precipice, then, that many people perhaps... are too frightened even to look over. So you might have that nagging thought in your mind, I don't think I like him anymore. I don't think he likes me. But yeah. Divorce, and this fascinates me, because when I was growing up, and it was still a fairly stigmatized thing to do, it was certainly a big deal in polite society when, you know, Mrs. Miggins at number 47 announced that she was divorcing. I remember when Adrian Mole's mum left Adrian Mole's dad, and it had a proper dramatic heft in those books, which were very much my sort of era. That's diminished. The stigma and the shame attached to divorce happily is diminishing. But is it even vaguely possible that it could diminish too far?
Yes, I've got to say, I'm of the generation now, I'm 46, but my parents, that was the one thing I was terrified of, is telling them, because I grew up in a shop, they were news agents, everybody's customer service, everybody...
You didn't ever have a 6-year-old boy coming and having nicked a Milky Way and being ordered by his mum to return it, did you?
We actually had the police march in a little lad once, saying, mum's called us.
Oh!
And it's only a news agent, but that was the way it was done.
Wasn't in Kidderminster by any chance.
No.
To be fair to my mum, she didn't get the police involved. So there were various obstacles you had to get over, but your sense of wanting and deserving more, or at least not wanting this, overcame all of them.
I needed my friends. I had 2 really close girlfriends, older than me, 20 years actually on me, and they helped. And when I said about what was going on, they said, no, come on, you've got to think of yourself. And that was hard, because I'm customer service, everybody else is right.
Yeah, and also, you know, that we were raised and conditioned to think that we were doing our children harm by not staying together. And I think that has also happily faded into the background in sort of public perception. It's clearly not true, and the rise in things like shared parenting has obviously made it, and proper shared parenting, when, you know, you split the week, the children split the week between 2 parents, and the more civilised relations are between the parents, obviously yours aren't that civilised or that warm, then the easier it is to do all of these things. But yeah, it is the finances, that idea of staying there because I can't afford not to. And almost a sort of tacit understanding on both sides that you're living in a weird kind of limbo. Michelle, thank you. Joe's in Birmingham. Joe, what would you like to say?
I'd just like to say that I was nodding along to a lot of that lady.
Really?
What that lady said, yes. I agree with a lot of that. I was married for nearly 20 years, and we had children, lovely life, you know, what have you. But as the children got older, I think as a woman, yeah, you put a lot into your family. You spend a lot of time doing stuff for your kids, your family, your husband, their parents, your parents, all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And I sort of sat there after quite a few years of sort of sitting there every night while he's on his iPad or doing whatever, and thought, there's got to be more to life than this, you know. And like the lady before you, I felt I'd be better off on my own.
Gosh.
You know, I'd be able to do more for myself without being made to feel guilty about it, or, you know, just even just to do, watch what I wanted on telly, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know. And it was just, I need more than this in my life.
Did it creep up on you, or did it hit,
yes,
you, did it hit you like a juggernaut?
It did creep up on me. I'd gradually got more and more sort of dissatisfied.
Once you start thinking about it, it just grows, yeah, I imagine, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I just wondered, because, again, I didn't want to split up for the children, but no, they were getting older. And literally, as I spoke to the children,
yeah,
after we split up, they sort of said to me, you should have done it years ago, Mum.
Oh.
You know. So whereas I thought I was being all happy families and, yeah, it's great, they could see I wasn't really that happy. Yeah.
Was he shocked?
Yeah, he was very shocked.
So he was in a perfectly comfortable rut as far,
yeah,
as he... And has his life improved? Or I mean, I don't want you to speak,
yeah,
out of school.
He's left. He was on his own for about 3 years. I think he's got another partner now.
Right.
And one of you. And I'm on my own, but I'm very happy. Yeah.
That's so, another thing that's changed socially, isn't it? In that you can, as a woman, live a perfectly... live the life you want to live without feeling that you need to be hitched or you need to have a partner there to either validate you. When I was a kid, you couldn't have been able to get credit unless you could get a man to sign for it, Joe. You'd have to have a husband or a father who'd sign a credit agreement if you wanted to buy a television in Currys.
Yeah, I can remember that. And I'm just so glad times have changed, because I say to my kids, I mean, I've got a son and a daughter. My son's 25, yeah, my daughter's 22. And I said to them, do not settle down. You don't need to get married. I mean, my son totally ignored me and got married last year.
Good. I bet it was a good day, though, wasn't it?
It was lovely, and they're very happy, and she's a lovely girl. I'm really happy for them.
Oh, that's nice.
But if I'd had my time again, I don't think I'd have got married when I got married.
No,
you know?
I mean, we just, I guess as the world gets bigger, and albeit that the conversation is supposed to be about the financial constraints, in so many other ways, we've got more freedom now than we had. We've got more choices, more ideas, more doors that we can push or knock on. And then you suddenly sort of think, well, I don't have to do that. And younger women, or women who are younger than me and you, are not persuaded that this is the only path towards sort of social validation or towards a full existence. Thank you. But both of you, Michelle and Joe, that's sort of kind of what I wondered about, what I thought might happen but wasn't sure it would. And it makes me sound naive. I fully appreciate that. But the divorce without trauma, as it were, the divorce itself will be traumatic, especially if one of you really doesn't want it. But the divorce that just sort of suddenly or slowly begins to make sense until it reaches a point where it makes so much sense that you can't really see any point in not doing it. A little more on this perhaps later in the programme, but up next, I have a guest coming into the studio who has two guests coming into the studio who, between them, actually, because Elliot, who would also be here, played a crucial part in what followed, have probably, by dint of something they did in 2006, on May the 8th, to be precise. So, what's the date today? Oh, nearly. It's the 7th today. 20th anniversary of this moment tomorrow has probably brought me more pleasure than anything else I've ever watched on a screen. And I'm not even going to add the unnecessary suffix No, I'm not even going to add it, because you all thought it, you filthy people. It brought me more pleasure than anything I've ever watched on a screen, and you can meet Guy Gomer and the producer who accidentally put him on the telly, Elliot Gotkin, after this. And this is, of course, the very latest headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Health officials from a number of countries, including the UK, are working to trace people who left a cruise ship before an outbreak of hantavirus was confirmed. The Dutch government says it's trying to locate around 40 people who disembarked the cruise on the island of St Helena. Train services across southern England are being disrupted this morning by a fault with a radio system. The issue has been resolved, but passengers are being warned to expect delays and cancellations for the rest of today. And the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has arrived in Rome for talks with Pope Leo. Mr. Rubio is aiming to repair relations between Washington and the Vatican after Donald Trump's repeated verbal attacks on the pontiff. LBC weather: showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas. Cloudy elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on, and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Calling all young creatives! It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 25 minutes to 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Well, I don't really want to beat around the bush. I want to get straight to my guests. But just in case you're just joining us or you do need a little bit of context, on the 8th of May, 2006, a Congolese Frenchman called Guy Gomer turned up at the BBC for an interview for a new job as a data cleanser. I didn't know what that meant then and I don't know what that means now. But while he was waiting in the foyer at the BBC, somebody came in and mumbled a name which he misheard as him and so followed this person to where he thought the interview would take place and found himself sitting in a television studio where the cameras quickly started rolling and he found himself being interviewed about a subject that he was, I think it's fair to say, not fully qualified to comment on. Guy Gomer is with me now. Guy, this is I've interviewed prime ministers, I've interviewed Hollywood stars, I've interviewed some of the biggest names in pop music and rock, I've interviewed comedians who sell out stadiums. I've never been more excited to have someone in my studio than you.
This with you. I'm so glad to be here with you.
And Elliot Gotkin, who has written a book with Guy called, I mean, it had to be, The Wrong Guy, but was, Elliot, the producer who, well, you didn't exactly make a mistake.
Well, I mean, now we all think that it was a marvellous thing to do, I suppose, but in the moment it certainly was a mistake.
Quite a big one, really.
Wait, but so did I get the setup right? Was it because I've sat in those foyers and I've got in the wrong car once because like someone might have held up a board that said Brian James instead of James O'Brien, and I thought, well, they've just got my name wrong, and I'll go and sit in. But I got in a car, guy. I didn't walk into a television studio. So is that how it happened? It was just a
well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Essentially, as I'm sure you know, old BBC Television Centre has two reception areas: main reception, stage door reception. So, with 10 minutes to go before we live on air, and you know how important it is to have your guests there and not be speaking to an empty, you know, an empty seat.
Yes.
10 minutes to go before we live on air, no sign of our guest, one Guy Cuny, the late Guy Cuny. I call down to main reception.
A technology journalist.
Exactly. One of the foremost technology journalists in this country. Have you got a Guy Cuny there? The receptionist tells me, yes. I run down the stairs, through the corridors, burst through the barriers to the lobby, scan the area, can't see the guy whose pictures I've just seen online on his website, newswireless.net. So I literally turn to the receptionist. Which one's Guy Cuny?
Yeah.
That guy over there. And she's pointing to our friend over here, who, to put it mildly, does not resemble Guy Cuny in any shape or form. So I turn back to her, are you sure that's Guy Cuny? Yes, she tells me. I go over to him. I say, Guy Cuny. Yes, he tells me. We're now on air in 5 minutes. I haven't got time to hang around and chat. Come with me, I say. We run through the corridor, up the stairs, hand him over to the floor manager. I go into the news gallery. Next thing you know, interview begins, and a legend is born.
Can I be the 1 millionth person, Guy Gomer, to ask you when you realised what was going on? Because the television shit, so did you think, this is a strange environment for an interview, but maybe it was the only room available?
Honestly, when I reached there, when they said to me, ladies told me, go and see them there. I just sat, the room looked like, for me, I call that a stage of the room.
Yes.
Because all the screen on the TV was fit off. And I just...
Of course, so we can see the screens on the when we're watching at home, but you can't see them when you're sitting in the studio.
So I just sat on one of the stools, and there was two stools on it. So for me, just to wait for the interviewer to come and maybe... So we're going to start doing our job interview.
And it wasn't until the first question was asked. That
exactly.
You...
Because as soon as the journalist came, she sat and all the lights went on straight away and she started talking. So that time I just realized I'm on the wrong place.
And you knew you wouldn't know it was live at this point. It could have been recorded.
As soon as I saw my face on all the TV in the room, I said, God.
This is just magnificent.
It's hilarious, to be honest.
And I'm just going to play that moment. I don't know if it works on the radio. It probably doesn't. But to be honest with you, I could just close my eyes and see it anyway. But here it is in audio form.
Well, Guy Cuny is the editor of the technology website News Wireless. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Were you surprised by this verdict today?
I'm very surprised to see this verdict to come on me, because I was not expecting that. When I came, they told me something else, and I'm coming. You got an interview there, so it's a big surprise anyway.
A big surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What were you talking about then? What did you think was happening?
I was looking the subjects. What's going on there? So I need to catch up on the subject at the same time. I was thinking, I need to be honest with myself.
Yes.
So that's when if you're on the screen, you can see the funny face that I made. It's not a funny face, but it's a body language.
Yes, yes.
To express something, my feeling on that time, to show... That's not me.
But you didn't... I mean, it was almost as if you wanted to help her get to the end of the interview without revealing that you were not, in fact, Guy Cuny.
Exactly.
But that was a lovely thing to do. Because, I mean, it wouldn't have been as popular, a piece of television, if you had done that. It would have been on the list of the greatest mistakes of all time, but it wouldn't have been the most charming. That's your personality. That's you thinking, I don't want to embarrass this lady.
Exactly what I was trying to do at that time.
Meanwhile, up in the gallery.
Cacophony and chaos at that moment. I mean, the thing is, I went into the news gallery and I didn't. And at that moment, like, the first question's asked,
yeah.
And then, and it's like, it's just the cacophony, I can hardly hear it. And I kind of like, Guy answers the first question and I literally say out loud, did he just say what I think he said? Because I heard something along the lines of, I wasn't expecting an interview. But no one's listening to me. Because I'm just, you know, a relatively small cog in that wheel. And there's just like chaos. And they're trying to get the lineup to Rob Pittam, who came to my kind of book launch last night, bless him. They're trying to get the lineup to Rob Pittam outside the High Court. But the technical problems happen as well. And so, I just to put this into context, we've had the architecture of the BBC with its two reception areas. We've had the receptionist telling me not once, not twice, but three times that Guy Gomer is Guy Cuny. I've got Guy Gomer telling me that he's Guy Cuny. Even the makeup artist has said, gone to put makeup on his face. And he said, no, I'm here for a job interview. Like, why on earth would I need makeup? Okay? So all of these things have happened. And then to kind of just add and just kind of put the cherry on top of this concatenation of cock-ups, you get this situation where the line they're trying to get up to the reporter, professional reporter Rob Pittam, outside the High Court, will not go up. So instead of just one question and making this just 20 seconds of legendary television, you've got a minute and a half.
And then the rest is history. When did you realise that things had gone absolutely crazy? Well, I mean, how quickly? Was it that day? Was it that evening? Was it the next? When things sort of...
It was the weekend.
Right.
When he came on the newspaper on that time. It was so viral.
Because the timing is significant, isn't it? Because clips were not a thing. There's the early clips of, like, that bloke in the park whose dog chased after the deer and he's shouting, Fenton! And now that wouldn't even merit a second glance. But because the clips were new, I was there myself almost at the early days of clips when everything changed in the media. And this was one of the first massive clips. So what, a newspaper worked out what had happened and went big with the story with a link to the footage.
Well, look, you've been in this industry long enough to know that journalists aren't always the most discreet, and clearly, at the BBC, people were talking among word spread within the BBC, okay? And they just rolled out, this also added to the situation, they'd literally just rolled out that week, that month, this new software program called Jupiter, which enabled you to share any clip to anyone
in the
BBC.
It was literally that month.
So then it got from the kind of News 24 newsroom, and it was on the Friday, and I saw the media managers, who are the gatekeepers for all things broadcastable, playing this across their screens, like, what's going on there? Someone at Milbank, the parliamentary unit, asked for it. It's like, what do you mean it's like, what, an editor, a producer, one of us? It's like, no, one of us. And that was when I realized that, look, if everyone inside the BBC knows about it, it's only a matter of time before everyone outside the BBC knows about this. I am screwed.
You're doing all right. Emmy award winning journalist. It didn't end your career.
No.
But it changed your life, Guy.
Absolutely. It's a big changing. Because, you see, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, to be honest.
Yes.
Because going to different places, meeting great people like you.
Let's not get carried away.
So, for me, it's quite a formula to see that, all kind of things.
And the paper broke that weekend. The clip went everywhere. None of us, as we've established, really understood what that meant or what that signified at the time. In terms of the life you were living at the time, as a sort of, you know, job-seeking data cleanser, what changed? Did people knock on your door? Did people track down sort of a family member? I mean, because once you're in that spotlight, it isn't always a very pleasant experience.
It was quite scary for me, because it was the first time for me to see all kind of... things, because...
Well, it was the first time for anybody to go through what you went
especially
through, actually.
Paparazzi.
Paparazzi, yes.
It was scary for me.
Yes.
Because I don't know what they're going to do to me or something happen. So I ran away from my flat. I went to live with my brother to get more support and protection. Because the only place I can get maybe support was with my family, close.
Yes, yes.
But then they tracked him down there as well. They were like people hiding behind trees and stuff, like trying to get a snap of Guy.
What did they want from him?
The money shot.
Just the shot of Guy. And then we come to the book, the Wrong Guy. And for people who think, how on earth did you get a whole book out of this? It's actually a 20-year story as well as a 20-second story, isn't it?
Exactly.
What did you think when Elliot... Did you keep in touch with Elliot over the...
For 18 years, no.
Okay, and then they got back in touch with each other.
Yeah, after that, Elliot tried to contact me, and...
How did he find you? Because I heard, no one could find you, Guy. It was you dropped off the face of the earth.
It was so easy to get me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But because sometimes it was quite tricky for me when some people just send me a message like that.
Yes.
If I'm not comfortable, I'll not reply.
Ah, I see.
But if you want to get me, I will always send people to my brother.
Okay.
To manage everything, to make sure you got the right person, what they want, and to avoid all those scary things.
Of course, because the book details some less than sort of reliable characters who saw an opportunity to exploit your situation and not look after you properly. So when Elliot said, I think we should do a book, I want to write a book, what did you think?
I was happy.
Yeah?
I was so happy. I said, Elliot, okay, let's do it, because you and I, we are all on the same boat.
Mm.
Mm. Why can you do something which can make it great and greater?
Why do you think it went so bonkers?
I think there are many reasons. First of all, superficially, it's just very funny.
Yeah,
it's a hilarious. I mean, look, you're cracking up just kind of talking when we're playing the clip.
I crack up every time. I think.
And that's wonderful to see. And your intro was just beautiful at how much this
joy,
clip means
joy,
to you.
It's exactly.
He's brought joy to. It's not an overest. I'm not exaggerating to say. Guy, this clip and Guy have brought joy to hundreds of millions of people around the world. And I am very happy that I have somehow played a role in that. But why do we still remember his kind of 50, why has this 15 minutes of fame endured for two decades? It's funny superficially. Of course, if you go beyond that, it's incredibly surprising to see that happen on the news, especially, you know, somewhere like the BBC, which, you know, is a very professional institution. You don't expect to see those kind of things. And then when you get beyond that, it's, as you say, you know, Guy felt inside the show must go on. He didn't want to cause embarrassment.
Yeah.
So there's that charm about it. And then also, and this is something so many people have said to me, including the Hollywood producers who 20 years ago were going to make a movie out of this, and it only didn't get made because of a writer's strike in 2007. Even they would say to me, one of the reasons so many people watch that clip and they think, by the grace of God go I, you know, it, like that could, what would I have done in that situation?
Yeah.
And most people, and I'm talking like presenters or other people that you speak to will say, they would have probably just run off and they wouldn't have handled it half as well as Guy did. And so just all of that combined really just made it such a meaningful clip. And the other thing I would say is because it was before the social media age, I think Twitter came out later that year.
Mm.
MySpace was the biggest social media company. If anybody listening doesn't remember that, it was kind of, you know, a kind of prehistoric version of Facebook. And so because of that, the fact that it did cut through meant that there was less competition. It was harder to cut through, but if you could cut through and it went viral, you were kind of home dry because there was less competition than there is today.
Yeah, I think that some moments will be so magical that they would even cut through today. And I still, for me at least, this would be one of them. I think because, as Elliot's touched on, Guy, it's because I think we all felt that we were sitting with you. Once you did that face, once we knew. And did she know? Did the interviewer know? Was
so
sort of wondering
I'll be honest
what was going
with you.
On,
I wasn't able to speak to Karen despite my best efforts.
Okay.
From Simon Waldman, the morning editor there, who is up in Scotland dealing with elections. From Simon Waldman, he understood from Karen that a message was got to him that this guy didn't seem to know much about the subject and therefore have something as backup. But Guy will tell you that. No one spoke to him before the interview, and it was just kind of like, sit down.
Here we go.
They
You're
sit
on.
Down, and off you go. So
Lights, camera, at you.
It's inconclusive.
Because from that moment of that facial expression, I think everybody was sitting next to you. I think everybody was just sort of going, he's going to get through this. He's going to get to the end of the interview. He's not supposed to be there, but he's going to get to the end of the interview. Two things we should clear up. You didn't get the job in data cleansing.
And you didn't.
It's outrageous.
People still asking that question every day.
Of course they do.
Every day.
And you mentioned that Guy Cuney is no longer with us, but as you say, he was one of the finest technology journalists of his generation. What did he make of it all?
He was not happy.
No.
Understandably, I should say. And I should say, when the penny dropped for me, which was after I'd shown Guy Gomer out the building, I went back to my little booth where we were doing business news. A producer from the main News 24 program comes to my desk and asks me, have you got a Guy Cuney as a guest? Yeah. And I say, yes. He's like, oh, he's waiting in stage door reception, the other reception. Apparently,
like
he's been
Ray
waiting
Cooney
there quite a while.
Yeah.
So that, for me, was when the penny dropped.
Right.
So when I heard that, I ran down to the other reception, found Guy Cuney there, who, by the way, looked just like his picture, and apologised more profusely than I've ever apologised before or ever will, said I'd make everything right. We pre-recorded an interview with him, left a message for the person replacing me on shift later in the day. Whatever you do, you must run this. And they didn't run it. And so that, understandably, again, further upset him.
Of course.
And may or may not have led to some kind of official complaint, which again didn't do me any favours either.
No, I suppose you're the victim of this and you're the star, aren't you? That's the way that that's the
yin and yang.
He created you. It's like the Shakespearean drama. Guy, thank you so much. Elliot, thank you so much for coming in. The Wrong Guy by Elliot Gotkin with Guy Gomer is out now. And one thing I wanted to do during this interview is establish beyond any reasonable doubt that the story merits at least one book and could quite easily have merited a Hollywood film, because I don't know, it speaks to the universal. But I can't let you go without...
Why?
You've got to do the face. You've got to do the face.
I'm trying my best.
Okay. So, what do you think of this verdict?
You're very surprised.
You are the wrong man.
That's not good enough. It's a beautiful thing. Guy, thank you. Elliot, thank
Thanks
you.
So
and,
much.
And The Wrong Guy is available. It's available now. It's such a pleasure to meet you. I never do this, but can I have a photograph?
Of course.
Thank you, Guy.
Today, voters head to the ballot box to mark Keir Starmer's report card. With his premiership under pressure, how big could the fallout be?
From 10 p.m, Lewis Goodall.
As the polls close, join me, Lewis Goodall, as we break down what's happening across the country and what it means for politics to come.
From 6 a.m, Nick Ferrari.
What will new governments mean for Scotland and Wales? I'll bring you all the fallout, the biggest names in politics, and importantly, hear your views too.
From 1 p.m, Sheila Fogarty.
Stay with LBC throughout the day as I bring you the declarations and drama set to shape the country for years to come.
Election Night Live, tonight from 10 p.m. Listen and watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Now with Little Plus, collect points that you can turn into possibilities. Pepper abilities. Ooh. Pasta abilities. Burrata abilities. Kayak abilities. So collect and spend your Little Plus points on hundreds of rewards or money off coupons. Lidl, more to value. Exclusions apply. For T's and C's, lidl.co.uk/LPTV 18 plus GB only.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorized for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 11:57, and I hope that you could detect that none of my excitement or enthusiasm about that interview was feigned or exaggerated before they arrived. And what a lovely man, and what a lovely sort of fortuitous moment that Elliot Gotkin, Elliot would be the producer involved, and such a great storyteller himself. Just magnificent. I love it when things like that happen. If you can remember, we were talking, and thank you for all the kind words as well. It's nice to see you enjoyed it almost as much as I did. We were talking about the notion of conscious uncoupling, although we didn't call it that at the time. We were looking instead at the idea of people having reached the end of their marriage, or one partner having reached the end of their marriage, whether the other one realised it or not, but not being able to move on because of financial reasons, which is what prompted Faye in Hitchin to ring in. Faye, what would you like to say?
Hello.
Hello, Faye.
Hi. I wouldn't call it conscious uncoupling. I'd just say that we ended a version of our marriage. And we're probably a little bit different than most people because we still actually live together.
Okay.
So
it's over. I mean, it's officially and explicitly over, but you're still living under the same roof.
Well, I suppose it depends what you mean by over. I mean, I still love him very much, and I think he still loves me. He probably wouldn't admit that. Okay. He'd probably tell you a different story than what I tell you. But we have been together for a very long time. I was 26, I think, 27 when I met him, and I already had a child. So he took my child as his own, and we went on to have a further 3 children together. So we've got a total of 4 children.
Mm.
And in around about 40, I just wasn't happy in the marriage.
So nothing big or serious, no explosions. You just sort of realised that you just were, but what, bored, dissatisfied, unfulfilled?
I think it was more me. I think now, after being 10 years away, I have apologised to him quite a few times that I blamed him. And I think sometimes I might get shouted at about this, but I think we do that as women without looking at ourselves.
Okay.
And I think the needs that I had were not being met. And I don't think he was capable of meeting them, and I needed to go off and sort of...
Well, so you physically left and then came back?
No, he left.
Right.
I wanted him to leave, but he didn't leave for long.
Okay.
It didn't really work. Weirdly, I remember feeling relieved when he got out of the house because I felt very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
But then I actually felt quite lonely when he sort of took the children and did things with them, and I didn't really like it. And so after probably about a year, I started working abroad. So I was away for a long time, 6 weeks at a time. So he would then have to sort of step up and kind of get a much better relationship with the children than he had. I mean, he's a really, really good man.
Okay.
But he worked.
So you had
worked,
quite an old-fashioned marriage then, by the sounds of it. Is that he didn't really pull his weight domestically?
I think this is something that we look at when we get older and we look back in our 30s when you're married.
Mm.
I think women, and I hope that, you know, no one takes offence to this, but we do the blame game. You know, when you've got 4 young children, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would take offence at that.
I think what we do as women is we blame the man. You're not doing this, you're not doing that, you're not doing this.
Oh, I see.
And we're putting a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah.
And we don't realise that they're having to go to work from 6 in the morning till 8 at night to feed us all and give us all the things that we need.
Mm.
And I think, in hindsight, I could have supported him more. But what it meant was our marriage, we just became like nothing. There was no conversation, there was no intimacy, there was just nothing there. And you know, when you're a woman and you're around 40, something happens to women when they're 40, and something definitely happened to me. And yeah, I was blindly led into leaving this marriage with no idea what was going to happen.
So you sort of regret it then?
No, I don't regret it.
No.
I've had the most incredible 10 years, and him and I are very happy. We're very, very good friends. I mean, I'll give you an example. A month ago, his brother died very suddenly from suicide.
Yeah.
And I was completely 100% obviously there for my husband, as I was his wife, and I played that role.
Okay.
Because
I
wanted to.
Do people know that you've split up? Outside of that, they do.
They also think it's a little strange. I mean,
it is a little strange, but if it works for you, it works for you.
Yeah, at the funeral, they played our wedding song, and in front of our children, we danced to that song. We do everything together as a family, and
do you see other people?
I've been in a relationship for 8 years, yeah.
And does he stay over?
No, that would be disrespectful to my husband. That is our family home.
And what about him? Does he want to see other people?
Well, he hasn't as of yet, but that's the kind of man he is. He's a very simple man. He's very happy with his lot, and maybe that's why we're...
You managed to find... Well, eh? It takes all sorts, doesn't it, Faye?
Yeah, but we're very happy, and our children are very happy.
And that, I think, is the most important thing of all. But, Well, after the way you said it, takes all sorts. It's not an experience I've come across before, but if it's working for you, it's working for you. Oh, and appropriately enough, it's Mystery Hour next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, officials from countries including the UK are working to trace passengers who left a cruise ship before an outbreak of hantavirus was confirmed. The Dutch government says it's trying to locate 40 people who left the ship on the island of St Helena. Two British people who were in the group have since returned to the UK and are now self-isolating at home. Head of the UK Health Security Agency, Professor Robin May, has told LBC the risk to the wider public is very low.
This is clearly not the same as COVID, so I really want to stress that. This is not a disease that, you know, if you walk past someone, even if they had it, you're going to pick up. It requires close contact, as far as we know. And actually, the emerging evidence is this is primarily transmitted from people who already have symptoms, not from people who are asymptomatic. So the risk is much, much lower here. In terms of the individuals concerned, there are also, you know, very small numbers of people that we will be focusing on. So we're working very closely with them.
Train services across southern England are being disrupted this lunchtime by a fault with a radio system. The issue has been resolved, but passengers are being warned to expect delays and cancellations for the rest of today. Southwestern Railway, Thameslink and Gatwick Express are some of the operators impacted. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog is looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. The former Harrods owner died in 2023, having never faced any charges. More than 400 allegations have been made against Al-Fayed, dating back to 1977. A former Sainsbury's shop assistant has told LBC that his soul is crushed after he was dismissed following an altercation with a thief. Gary MacArthur lost his job in March after escorting a shoplifter out of a store in South London last December. It's understood that he'd received a previous warning about tackling a shoplifter. Mr. MacArthur has told us that his job meant everything to him.
I am more in touch with the older community that came into the store. I'd greet them, I'd hug them, I'd chat with them. We'd laugh, we'd cry sometimes. So there's a real sense of love and loyalty for me and the colleagues and customers.
Sainsbury's says it asks staff to stick to guidelines specifically designed to keep everyone safe. There's more on this story on the LBC app. And the US Secretary of State has arrived in Rome for talks with Pope Leo. Marco Rubio is looking to repair relations between Washington and the Vatican after President Trump's repeated verbal attacks on the pontiff. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 71 at 10,367. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers for northern and western parts of the UK, some sunny spells for the east and south, cloudy elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tackles the crunch and theatrical diving, rivals on terraces sobbing and crying, last minute winners that change everything. These are a few of our favourite things. When you're singing, yet not winning, when your bet's gone bad, we simply remember our favourite things, and then we'll feel so
for all your favourite things, visit BetVictor. 18 plus gambleaware.org. Please gamble responsibly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Ever have something that you didn't realise was on your bucket list until it happened and then you realised it was on your bucket list? That was me today, meeting Guy Goma. I'm still a little bit starstruck by that whole encounter. And I got a photo, thank you very much. I shall be adorning my social media with that later today, probably. But enough. It's Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio. You ring in, someone rings in with a question, and then someone else rings in with the answer. It may sound prosaic, predictable, even possibly dull, but it's none of those things. Quite the opposite, in fact. I don't know what the opposite of prosaic is, but it's unpredictable and never dull. As I will now prove, between now and 1 o'clock. But I can do nothing without you. And you need to tell me the mystery with which you are currently wrestling, the conundrum with which you are currently struggling, the riddle which you are currently pondering. Doesn't write itself, this stuff, you know. And you ring in with that. My favourite contribution of the week is going to receive a prize. And that prize is a Mystery Hour game. You can either have the Mystery Hour board game or you can have the Mystery Hour travel game. It's in a tin. They're completely different. Many people have both and report equal levels of delight with both formats. So find out more about that at mysteryhour.co.uk and get the full terms and conditions for this official actual grown-up adult radio competition with a proper prize at lbc.co.uk. I think that's pretty much it. I'm just going to indulge myself because I'll never get this chance again. I'm just going to do something. I never normally interrupt Mystery Hour, but, you know, what's the point of having a radio show if you can't do what you want on it? Within reason. Obviously, there's one thing I can't talk about today. But can I have this face now in front of me for the rest of the show?
Well, Guy Cuney is the editor of the technology website News Wireless. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Were you surprised by this verdict today?
I'm very surprised to see this verdict to come on me, because I was not expecting that. When I came, they told me something else, and I'm coming. You got an interview there, so it's a big surprise anyway.
A big surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What would you do? How good would you be? Oh, whoa. Anyway, enough. David's in Brixham. David, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question, but can I just say something quickly beforehand? Just thank you for being you, and thank you for your kindness and compassion and common sense.
Thank you. That's a lovely thing to say. Thank you. Yes, you can say that, actually. You have my permission. Okay. Carry on.
Thank you. The question, I have a bit of a slug problem, if you pardon the expression.
Yes.
For the last year, I've had to replace two dishwashers because the slugs, they climb over the kitchen counter and they end up in the dishwasher. And my question is, I do have other appliances in the kitchen, like the toaster, the kettle, and a food processor, etc., and they don't target those. Why the dishwasher?
You've had to replace the dishwasher twice?
Yes.
So what do the slugs do to it?
They blow it.
As in, they get into the electrics and everything goes south?
Yes. It just, the machine stops working. It goes dead.
Well, I mean, what did the dishwasher engineer say? Had he come across this problem before?
No, funny enough. He just said, he spotted the sludge from the slug, and he said, "You've got slugs, mate."
Well, you knew that.
Well, I knew that because I've seen them on the kitchen counter.
Where did they come from? Is the dishwasher the point of ingress and egress? Is that like their doorway to your dimension?
That was our original question, and then the engineer had a look, and he even put a mesh, where there was an opening.
Yeah.
And everything is sealed. It's only behind the dishwasher. So they come under the counter. There are other fissures in the kitchen where they come through.
Other what is?
Other, fissures.
Fissures. As in fissures.
Oh, perfectly spelled.
I thought you said fishes. I thought you had fish coming in as well as slugs, in which case you clearly have a flooding problem, not a slug problem.
No, just slugs.
So they're coming in from outside and then they're bolting for the dishwasher.
Yes.
And you can't block up the other fissures.
I have.
And they're still coming.
They're still coming in.
This is oscillating between a comedy sketch and a horror film.
Yes, exactly.
What's the question?
Why? What is it about the dishwasher and not the other appliances in the kitchen?
Well, the water. No, why do slugs always come out in the rain in my garden?
And they largely do here as well. So, although sometimes I have seen them when it's been dry.
To be honest with you, I'm surprised you're not asking where they're coming from, but I suppose that would demand a slightly better familiarity with your kitchen.
Exactly.
I've never heard the like of it, to be honest, and that's not that surprising, because the dishwasher engineer hasn't either.
No, I mean, why didn't they blow up the oven or the toaster?
Well,
that's
going to be the water. That's got to happen. Really, I don't know. So an electrician might be able to tell us why a slug would gravitate. No. So, no, an amphibious, a biologist might be able to tell us why a slug would gravitate towards the dishwasher, and then an electrician could tell us why a slug would fuse a dishwasher. I mean, what? Have you put down loads of salt?
No, I haven't. I live, where I live, I've got very soft water, so I don't use salt in the machine.
No, but have you just, like, sprinkled salt everywhere to kill the slugs?
I did before, but then, I have done before, and then you just get a salt everywhere and you have to hoover it out, you know, it's just...
Well, it's better than slugs, mate.
I guess so.
And you don't use dishwasher salt? You don't put dishwasher salt in the dishwasher?
No. Don't need to.
I mean, if... Just excuse me for one moment, David, if you would. If you're tuning into this programme for the first time and you're wondering what on earth is going on, then don't worry. I've been presenting it for over 20 years and I don't know either. Sorry, David. I just wanted to get that out there. So the question is, why are they going for my dishwasher? Not where they're coming from.
No, yeah. Why are they going for the dishwasher?
Okay. Yeah. I'll try and find out for you, mate. You're not interested in getting help in stopping them? I mean, it's not really that sort of phone-in, but to be honest, I think people are probably caring a lot now.
I did think about it, but knowing you the way I know you, you probably would have cut me off.
I wouldn't have taken that call, actually, at the beginning, but at the end of the conversation, if anyone wants to add ideas to how we can deal with David's slug infestation... Is it an infestation, would you say? Do you see a slug every day?
No.
How
often? Every few days. Okay. Every few days, probably 2 or 3 times a week, maybe.
Okay, well, what's the word for that, then? I mean, it could be the same slug moving slowly. It's an infestation. It's not an infestation. It's just a sort of... What is it? It's a
slug problem.
A problem. Yeah, well done. It's a slug problem. Coming through the fissures. No one wants slugs in their fissures. Right, let's find out. A, why the dishwasher? And B, if you're so minded to do it. It's not something that, I don't know, would a pest control expert ever be asked to deal with slugs? A gardener? But anyway, there you go. I told you that Mystery Hour was unlike every other hour of the programme. Anne-Marie's in Barnet. Anne-Marie, question or answer?
Question, please, James, and thank you for taking my call. Brilliant show, and thanks for the laugh.
Good Lord.
Earlier.
I'm being bombarded with compliments today, Anne-Marie. I could get big-headed if I wasn't so naturally modest. What would you
well
like?
Deserved. Well deserved.
What's the question?
Right, so my question is, why do they weigh our luggages at the airport before we get on the plane? Obviously, I know it's to do with fuel and, you know, trying to gauge how much fuel to put on the plane, but why do they not weigh us as passengers? What's the logic behind that? Because surely you need to know the weight of the passengers on the plane in order to evenly distribute it, I'd like to think. And that's my question. Why are we not weighed, even though I probably wouldn't want to be weighed in public, but that's not the point.
It might be the point. It probably is the answer to the question, in that it would be... No, I mean it. In that it would be, you know, quite an... what are you going to do with the information? What are you going to... Oh, you better sit at the back, love. That kind of thing.
But it could be done discreetly, exactly, because surely they need to gauge how much fuel to put on the plane and also for it to be evenly distributed. Because if you think someone looks a bit heavy set, you don't want to put them all on one side of the plane. But obviously you're giving
Do
your
Do you need ticket. To weigh them? Do you need to weigh? I mean, because you're checking online these days, don't you? So you could end up with a horribly... I mean, what if you had? I'm going to be quite diplomatic now, Anne-Marie, so just bear with me a moment. Well, sumo. Like, if you had a sumo wrestling team on the plane, right?
Yeah.
And they were all put on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
And then you had a synchronised swimming. So it's an Olympic event that I'm imagining now. And then you had the synchronised swimmers who were all on the right-hand side. So the pilot, you know, looks out the back of the door and he's got some of the biggest humans on the planet all lined up on one side of the plane and some very, very lithe and slim human beings on the other side of the plane. Is that going to have... Well, the first question is that going to have any impact on the... because it obviously doesn't, otherwise they would weigh us. So in a way, it's quite a circular question.
I think it would, though. I think this could have...
Run me through your aviation qualifications, Anne-Marie.
I haven't yet been accredited. I'm working on it.
Yeah, because about, I don't know how many years, how many decades of experience suggest that it is not a problem, but you're convinced that it is.
I think it is. Honestly, I'm sure there's someone out there that has some sort of reason. Maybe we are weighed when we do step on the plane.
Or visually assessed, but that's what makes the online checking in such a factor in this conundrum, isn't it? What would happen
is... But that's why you have to... But when are you giving your boarding passes? I suppose when you're giving, because the computer, because everything's becoming computerised
now. Hand luggage, so some people don't even check in their luggage anymore. They go just use hand luggage, don't they? So why, I mean, I don't know quite what the question is, but why do they not weigh humans at the airport?
Well, probably how do they gauge how much fuel they need for the plane?
They're going to be working largely on averages, and there's about 300 people on the average plane, so they're going to balance each other out. If you were flying, have you ever flown in a small plane?
No, I haven't. Well, with Ryanair, because I'm sure Ryanair would probably weigh their passengers if they probably could.
If there was a quid in it. I think if you're in a small aircraft, it's like being on a boat. If you're on a boat, so, you know, a small boat, then you do actually arrange the people on the boat in order to balance it out. So on a small aircraft, you would. But I suspect a jumbo jet is so big that it's unlikely to make any difference. But I'll put the question on the board. Why don't they weigh our luggage? So why, well, they weigh our luggage so they can charge us if we go over. I mean, that's part of the reason, isn't it?
Which happens to me all the time. But why don't they weigh us?
Okay, lovely question. Thank you, Anne-Marie. It's 12:17. You're listening to Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC.
LBC. Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with Pensionbee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No?
At Pensionbee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix Kitchen Experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 18 minutes after 12. Slugs. Why do slugs, I don't know, keep breaking David's dishwasher? And why do we weigh people at the airport but not luggage? I think one of those questions might be a little bit... No, why do we weigh luggage at the airport but not people? Thank you, Keith. I think one of those questions might be a bit easier to answer than the other one, but we'll find out. Dave's in Rye. Dave, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
So out of our 15 mugs that we have in our cupboard,
oh, yes.
why do I prefer to make tea in only five of them with one clear favourite? Is it something in my psychology?
And you, well, I mean, what do you think is going on? Do you think that it tastes better?
I do. I think that it looks better as well.
Are they are they different colours on the inside?
No, they're all white on the inside.
Yeah, but are they different colours?
On the outside.
All right, so it was a joke, that, but it probably doesn't really... They're all white on the inside. They're all white on the night. But they're all different colours on the outside.
All different patterns. And the ones that I prefer... Actually, my wife prefers the same mug, strangely enough. The ones that we prefer are those kind of generic ones that you might... buy as a souvenir of a visit to a garden or something with a brand printed on it. The rest of them, the tea just looks more brown than orange and doesn't taste
cheaper?
The same.
Do you think they cost a bit less, the cheaper ones?
No.
They're decent mugs, aren't they? Some of them bone china and some of them are just bog standard china?
Well, that's a difficult question.
Thinner? Are they all the same shape? I'm like
no,
a mug detective.
All more or
someone
less the
find
same,
Channel
more
5.
Less, yeah, the kind of just generic mugs you might...
They're all mugs.
...go and buy as a souvenir. All mugs. But my wife did buy four very expensive mugs that we ended up ditching because they didn't taste right out of those either. So generally, the ones that we really like are the kind of... They're not thin and they're not thick. They're just kind of ordinary, generic mugs.
Well, let's find out. I mean, as you say, it could be something psychological, but the fact that you both prefer the same mugs suggests that, there might be a sort of composition element going on. They're all the same. They're similar shapes. They're all the same colour on the inside. So same thickness of mug wall.
More or less.
More or less.
Without getting a micrometer on them, yeah.
Yeah. Next time you ring me, please get a micrometer out first.
I'm sorry, I'll do my research.
Thank you. Honestly. I like that question. Let's find out. Okay. 03456060973. Thank you, Dave. Emily is in Haringey. Emily, question or answer?
Hi. Oh,
so excited.
Hello.
I've got a question.
Yes.
So, you know when you have plastic bags, plastic bottles, just plastic in general, and we're taught not
yes.
to because it's bad for the environment, takes 400 to 1,000 years to disappear.
Yes.
How do they know that? Because obviously those things haven't been around for 1,000 years. So what do they do? What do they do?
This is a superb question. This is an absolute... Give her a round of applause, Keith.
Yeah. My kids are going to be so proud of me.
What are they called?
My boys are called King and Ace.
There we go.
And every time we have a mystery in our house, they always say, Mummy, ask Mystery Hour.
Ask
always.
Mystery Hour. There it is. How do they know how long it takes plastic to decompose? Because it's only been around for about 80 years.
Exactly. And you know when you go and buy a sofa from somewhere, they say they've got they have adverts where they have like a kind of a fake metal bum sitting on a sofa up and down. They say, you know, this sofa's been sat on 75,000
yes.
times. I get that.
Yeah.
Because you could.
That's not
that.
An opinion. That's counting.
That's counting. Exactly. So what is there a secret time machine that we don't know about? I don't know.
Sensational question. One of my all time favourite questions. Straight up. I'll tell you what, Emily, you're going to take some beating. You, King and Ace, could be getting a Mystery Hour game very, very soon, unless something extraordinary happens between now and 1 o'clock. I'm not even joking. Thank you. And I thought David Slugs were going to be ahead of the field by this point in proceedings as well. How do they know how long it takes a plastic to decompose, given that it only got invented quite recently? Helen is in Bonus in Scotland. Helen, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Helen.
My apologies for this at lunchtime.
Right. What are you going to do?
Well, exactly. cats and gallbladders.
Yes.
So we've got two cats. One of them's a bit of a hunter. And even this morning, I got delivered a mouse.
Right.
And yesterday, I found a gallbladder on our stairs. Because cats don't eat the gallbladders because apparently it's very bitter for them.
Mm.
But I'm wondering, given how they attack them and eat them, how are they able to leave it so well intact before they've even like bitten into it and gone, oh, I don't want to eat that? It's like they know it's there, they know where it is, and they work around it, and then they leave it perfectly intact.
Well, I mean, you may have answered the question yourself. I imagine that they've tasted it once, haven't they?
Sure, but then how do they know
mouse.
Exactly where it is to be able to leave it completely unmarked? It's like a perfect, neat little organ.
Is it?
That they just
and there's
leave.
Nothing,
yeah.
I mean, but they haven't eaten everything else. They haven't eaten the claws and the...
Yeah.
Well, they have eaten everything.
Yeah.
Everything, absolutely everything, like the nose, the whiskers.
Everything. I've seen it and I've heard it.
Ooh, that's
it's
not
disgusting.
Are you sure that's a cat?
Yeah. Yes, her name's Debbie Reynolds.
Okay, and it's definitely a domestic cat, not like
a... It's definitely a cute little tortoise shell with a dark side.
And it scoffs a lot.
Yeah.
Except the gallbladder.
Yeah, and it's left completely intact.
Well, so that, I mean, again, in a way, if it was... No, I don't, all right, you're on, yeah. I mean, it might just be unique to Debbie Reynolds, this skill.
I don't know, when I asked my mum what it was, she said, oh, no, that's a gallbladder, they don't like it. So she had that sort of previous knowledge.
Well, what's the other cat called?
Dorothy Gale.
Of course. and it's not, I mean, the answer isn't going to be smell or anything like that, because you know what you're interested in is the sort of anatomical...
The
precision.
That they can eat
the precision.
Exactly that.
So it's not
that.
Like,
how
they're not eating. How do they eat around it? How do they manage
to
eat the whole mouse without accidentally puncturing the gallbladder? Or,
exactly.
Well, I mean, I'd like you, if you would, to imagine a Sunday dinner in front of you.
Okay.
And you now have, in the middle of the plate, there is a single roast potato.
Mm.
How hard would you find it to eat the entire Sunday dinner without touching that single...
Well,
without...
fine, but I can see that potato.
Well, they can see... They've ripped the... I mean, they've ripped... I know the cat's
not
got cutlery,
that
Keith.
I've
it's
seen
got claws.
The way that they eat mice, it's not like they, you know, rip it apart and then look at all
and
the different
carefully
bits
nudge
then...
it around, but the gallbladder gets spared every time.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything you can do with gallbladders? Mice gallbladders? Is there anything...
Like what?
I don't know. I might use them to dye cloth or something like that.
It's a very small thing and it tends to just go down the toilet.
Okay.
Can I ask a favour, please?
Yeah, just hang on a minute. I need to make it absolutely clear because my inbox has gone a bit bonkers and sometimes that's a precursor to the phones being clogged up. We are not asking why cats don't like gallbladders.
No.
Thank you. We are asking how cats are capable of devouring an entire rodent while leaving a fully intact gallbladder on the carpet.
Exactly.
What's the favour?
Right, my kids are off school today. It's an inset day and they will be listening. Could they please have a little shout out?
Of course they can. What are their names?
Their names are Bonnie and Andy.
This is lovely. Bonnie, Andy, eat your peas, but stay away from gallbladders.
Thanks, James.
Thank you very much. And enjoy your inset day as well. It was a little bonus, aren't they? 12:27 is the time. Paul is in Hartford. Paul, question or answer?
Answer, James. Good morning.
Oh, carry on, Paul.
Aircraft weights.
Yes.
Passengers.
Yes.
Standard weights are used for passengers. It's easier than weighing everybody.
Yeah. So, somebody take an average, a rough average, as it were.
Yeah. And it will vary depending upon the size of the aircraft. So for your larger airliners, a male is assumed to weigh 84 kilos.
Oh, yeah.
90 kilos for a male, 75 for a female, half that for a child, and nothing for a baby on a lap.
Okay. And that will even out enough to ensure that there's not... What about my sumo wrestler synchronized swimming fantasy?
He'll be offset by the yoga teacher. So.
No, but what if I've got all the sumo wrestlers up one side of the plane and all the yoga teachers up the other side?
Oh, you don't do that. In that case, the cabin crew look. On the smaller aircraft, it would be a problem. And something like a 787 that takes off at 250 tonnes...
Yeah, the wings are so huge and the fuselage is relatively small, it's not going to make the blindest bit of difference anything. So they would weigh as if they needed to, but they don't, is the answer to the question.
They do, and we used to when I flew smaller aircraft.
Yeah.
Yes, sometimes you do. But the larger the aircraft, the less of a problem. The margins in terms of performance are bigger. So it's not an issue.
And why do they weigh the luggage? Just for financial reasons?
Probably, but also so they can distribute it in the hold and balance it out that way as well.
So they can do that, but luggage is a lot easier to distribute than humans.
Yeah, it is.
Qualifications?
Commercial pilot.
That'll do nicely. Lovely stuff, Paul. From Paul to Pally. Pally's in Southall. Is it Pally or Pally?
Pally.
Question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Right. Right, so I'm out and running for the Mystery Hour board game because I've already had my present today because it's my birthday.
Okay. Right? What did you get?
That's the question. I've got a smartwatch.
Oh, lovely.
And one of the things on the smartwatch is, when I'm setting up this morning, is that it says there's an option for standing up. So how does it know I'm standing up or sitting down?
Well, because if you've got your hand on your... On your armrest, Keith's doing a little mime now, but your hand's on the armrest and you stand up and the watch is at the same place. Is it horizontal and vertical?
I don't know. I said, you know, sometimes you're sitting there and your hand's on your lap something.
No, hang on, wait there a minute. I'm standing up. So it's more or less the same height that it was when I was sitting down. Look, watch. You might have to... Yeah. Tune in on this later on YouTube if you're a bit confused as to what's going on. I'm currently sitting down, and standing up. Yeah, so my hand shape has changed. I mean, my hand is pointing downwards when previously it was pointing upwards, but that's not guaranteed. And the watch is, I mean, you've only had it a day. Maybe it's not completely reliable.
But it's already said, I've been sitting down.
Yeah.
And it's already said I've been stood up for 2 minutes when I was sitting down.
Oh, so it's already made a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, then the question's pointless. You're asking, how does it do this magical thing that it doesn't even do?
Is that user error, or is it sort of a fault in the watch?
It could be a user error. You're either sitting down or you're standing up.
Yeah, so how does the watch know?
Well, it doesn't. Does it? You've just told us that. A bit late in the story, Pally, to be honest, but it doesn't, does it? How is it supposed to work?
Hopefully someone will be able to... Explain.
All right. Is there a bubble inside it, do you think? Like a little spirit level or something like that? Is that possible? It's unlikely.
I don't know.
Okay. It could be. You never know. All right, you're on. Is that someone who needs you? Is that someone ringing up to wish you a happy birthday?
Probably. Oh, it's gone to answer phone now.
All right. Well, I'm not allowed to play you any happy birthday songs. Nick Abbott has copyrighted them all on this radio station. But from the bottom of our hearts, we wish you a very, very happy birthday.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Paddy. Are you currently sitting down or standing up?
I'm sitting down.
I knew it. Amelia Cox has the headlines.
Officials from various countries are working to trace passengers who left a cruise ship before an outbreak of hantavirus became known. Two British people who returned to the UK from the trip last month are now self-isolating at home. There's major disruption on train services across southern England due to an earlier fault with the radio system. Passengers are being warned to expect delays and cancellations for the rest of the day. And a number of serving and former Met police officers are being investigated over how they handled allegations against Mohamed Al-Fayed. More than 400 sexual abuse claims have been made against the former Harrods owner, who died having never faced any charges. LBC weather mostly cloudy this afternoon, though the east and south will see some sunny spells. Showers affecting the north and west with drier weather elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Daddy, cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away. You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind is a bold and uplifting new musical based on the incredible true story of 13-year-old William Kamkwamba, who dared to dream big against impossible odds. Don't miss the West End premiere, playing now at Soho Place for a strictly limited run until the 18th of July. Book now at sohoplace.org.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, energising a better Britain.
It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Why are the slugs in David's kitchen obsessed with his dishwasher? Why does God all the Daves? Why does Dave have favourite teacups? Oddly, mirrored, his preferences are mirrored by his wife, despite the fact that, to all intents and purposes, the teacups are interchangeable. I mean, they're not; they're different colours and things, but they're not obviously different. How do they know how long it takes a plastic to decompose, given that plastic has not been around for that long? How do cats manage to avoid gallbladders when consuming a mouse? And is Pally currently standing up or sitting down? Daniel's in Gateshead. Daniel, question or answer?
I have an answer for your teacup.
Really?
So I deal a lot within the multi-sensory perception of coffee, within coffee. It's quite a complicated one, but basically the lip of the cup dictates mouthfeel. The width and the shape of the cup will dictate the way how the volatile aromatic compounds of the beverage reach you, and that's what you perceive as taste. And then the colour of it then also has to do with the cross-modal effect that your brain does when experiencing something. So you will have a cup that has, so if you have a very thin rim, or even the shape of the rim, that will make it feel kind of quite watery. But if you have a rim that's kind of curved, in essence, that will make your beverage feel a more kind of like juicy or syrupy. It will kind of give it a heavier body. If you have something that's quite often like a tulip shape, that helps with kind of the aromatic compounds, or if it's narrow, then it will kind of also make it a bit more woody in some cases. And now, this isn't the same for everyone because of that cross-modal effect. So we all experience life differently, and our brains fill in a lot of gaps. So you can have three cups of three different colours, and your brain, you can't make something that isn't there, but you can have a certain influence that will then heighten something that you're experiencing. So if you have a pink cup or a red cup, then it will maybe make it more floral. If you have it like yellow or green, well then those things that you just associate with yellow or green are kind of heightened. So there's this thing called the Buba Kiki effect by a psychologist.
No, stop it.
I think 1924.
What's it called?
The Buba Kiki effect.
That's so not really made that up.
So, James, yes? if I was to say, right, chocolate, to you, is it Buba or Kiki?
Say it again.
Is chocolate to you Buba or Kiki?
Chocolate. I think chocolate. It might be Buba.
Right.
I'm 52% right. Buba, 48% Kiki.
If I was to say lemon,
yeah,
is lemon,
oh, Kiki,
Buba,
Kiki,
or Kiki,
Kiki, Kiki, Kiki, Kiki, Kiki.
Exactly, because Kiki is a sharper sound, and therefore it's a sharper kind of thing.
Really?
Yes. So a lot of it's psychological, and about 95% of the entire world's population, irrespective of culture, background, etc., will agree that Buba, that chocolate, for example, is Buba, and lemon is Kiki, irrespective of culture, religion, background, everything.
Well.
So with regards to the cups, we'll all have our kind of favorite cups. Right?
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact ins and outs of the gentleman and his wife, but yes, they probably have quite similar tastes, quite similar experiences, etc., and therefore they just agree that those mugs, therefore that particular thickness, size, shape, etc., is what's nice for them.
This is one of the finest answers in the history of Mystery Hour. And it's not the first one you've presided either, is it? Provided.
It's not, no.
Because I know what your qualifications are. You run a cafe in a park in Gateshead.
I do indeed, yes, I do indeed. But to add to it, in January, I attended a multi-sensory course by Dr. Fabiana Carvalho from the University of Campania in Brazil, and she is a neuroscientist and biochemist, and we distilled all of this.
Is it Prism Coffee?
It is indeed, yes.
So if I come to Prism Coffee in Saltwell Park in Gateshead, see, some people think I don't keep a track of my favourite callers. and I were to order a drink. Let me get it out there, Buba Kiki. Mm. How much of what we've learned, what you've learned, yes, would actually be brought to bear on my coffee drinking experience in Prism Coffee in Saltwell Park?
So in Prism Coffee in Saltwell Park, not much, because we only serve out of paper cups because it's takeaway, because I only serve through a window, in the future, if I was to open up a sit-down coffee shop, I'm actually currently in the middle of designing my own cup with my brother, who owns a ceramic studio in south of Munich.
This is just sensational.
Very, very particular about the shape.
So you're
going to
make a cup. You're going to make the Uber cup. The cup of cups.
Well, there is no such thing.
Well, of course there's not, because we all experience life differently.
Exactly, right? So all I can do, so people who might criticise my coffee or whatever it is, it's whatever. It makes no difference to me, because there's nothing I can do about their experience.
You know that you have produced a quality brew, and a bit like one of those weirdos that can't eat coriander. You can't blame the chef, can you?
Genetic.
You can't blame the chef.
So you can only taste five things, right? For example, bitterness and acidity is genetic, while everything else is basically environmental.
Yes.
So there are some. So about 50% of the population experience bitterness in generally the same kind of way, and then there's 25% who are called non-tasters, and they perceive bitterness incredibly low. So they're the kind of people that love their incredibly bitter coffee, their 100% chocolates, all those sort of things, because the receptors on their tongue.
I went to school with a lad who'd eat a lemon like the rest of us at oranges.
Yes,
he would be. Yes, he'd be that latter category.
Yeah, exactly. And so it would be a non-taster. And then you also get super tasters. Now, super tasters isn't really what it says. It's not a great label, right? But they're people who are oversensitive. Now,
you wouldn't want to be a super taster necessarily.
Exactly. It depends on your cross-model effect. So you might be a super taster and actually just love it.
It just doesn't really happen to me, but I'm a little bit lost for words. If you'd told me that someone ringing in to ask about their favourite mug was going to prompt what it is about to prompt, I would have laughed you out of the studio. Have you had one before?
One what, sorry?
A Ray Liotta.
I haven't, no.
Well, you've got one now.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
I almost wish you there was some sort of certificate that you could put up in the coffee shop. That was magnificent, Daniel. That was
a beautiful
combination of expertise, enthusiasm, but also top-quality communication skills. That was a pleasure to witness. Thank you.
Thank you very much, James.
No, thank you. Is business all right? Is business good? Let's get people get yourself down Prism Coffee and get yourself a delicious drink. Are you still doing the black pudding sausage roll?
I am indeed, yes.
So is that a sausage roll with a bit of black pudding in it, or is it a sausage roll that has no that is full of black pudding?
So this is where thousands of people are going to have their minds blown. It's actually vegan.
Whoa.
So basically we use Burry's black pudding. So they've been making black pudding for over 150 years.
They have.
But they make a vegan one, which instead of using blood, uses black beans. It's the exact same spice mix and everything. But the difference is that if you were to use a blood black pudding in purely within a sausage roll, it would just go really mushy. So you have to cut it with the sausage meat. Now, with the vegan one, you don't have to do that. So what we do is we add a little bit of vital wheat gluten, right, which adds a bit more protein, a bit more firmness, which means we can make it purely out of black pudding. So it is the most black pudding sausage roll you could ever have.
I could listen to you all day, honestly. Thank you. I can't give you any more than a Ray Liotta. And now I've got competition.
Appreciate it, James.
Do you want to get... Because remember Emily, who was in the lead to get the game, has two children. So I'm going to let you decide whether or not you... Do you want to go into the hat for the game, or do you want to leave it to the lady with two children?
No, she can have it. It's all
You're
good.
Such a top man, Daniel. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations seems a bit of an odd thing to say. But anyway, that was an absolute job. What a show. Is it me, or is this one of the best shows we've ever done? It's not just me, then. But it's the best one in a long time. More laugh out loud, more genuine comedy moments than I can remember in a very, very long time. But also moments like that, moments of utter charm and delight and illumination. Daniel's in Exeter. Daniel, question or answer?
I've got a question, James. I have no idea how I'm meant to follow on from that previous caller.
This man was a genius. I mean, he's just extraordinary. I might go to Gateshead especially just to try his fares.
Have a good first name.
This is true. There's a lot of you around today. Carry on. Question is Dave's and Daniel's today with a side order of Emily, Helen and Pally. What have we got?
Got a question for you. Penguin bars. How many unique jokes are there?
Penguin bars? We've got a flipping phone line glitch here. Did you say penguin bars? That was almost deliberately done. Right, just wave, okay? Nod once for yes and twice for no. Did you say penguin bars?
Yes, I did, yes.
Yes, right. And they have jokes on them?
Yes.
I can't do that. Well, how did this happen? It's just because I jinxed it by saying it's one of the best shows we've ever done. So now they've decided to put through a call with a... So they've got unique... I didn't even know this. I haven't had a penguin bar for years. I prefer a Viscount or a Viscount, you know, the minty ones. Both of which, I think, don't have chocolate on them anymore, but they have a chocolate-flavoured coating. I hope I'm not maligning the penguin when I say that, but because that gets you into all sorts of trouble. Just ask Batman. But he's back. Are you back? Are you on a better line?
Is this any better, James?
Yes, absolutely, infinitely.
Okay, so penguin bars. How many unique jokes are there on the sides of on the packets?
Each individual penguin has a joke on it, does it?
Correct.
And how many have you counted so far?
Six or eight.
Is that all? And how often do you have a penguin?
Every few days, maybe.
So you've got through quite a lot of penguins, and you've only come across half a dozen or so jokes.
I don't always eat.
I'm not pressuring you. I sound like I'm badgering the witness. I'm just curious. Is that true? Guess how many penguins Keith eats every day?
I don't know, maybe two or three.
Two a day, mate. Two penguins every day.
So Keith could be quite well qualified to answer this one.
I know. It's a shame that we are professionally required to completely ignore him. Do you notice the jokes? Do you read the jokes on every single one? Sometimes he shares it with the producers in the other room. God, all the fun goes on that side of the wall, doesn't it, eh?
Exactly.
How often does it come round again, Keith? Sorry, Daniel, I'm just talking to Keith. you get two, you get the same joke in a pack of seven. Have you ever had that, Daniel?
Yeah, but when I get another pack of them, there's entirely different jokes on them.
I like this question, Daniel. I mean, it's a bit late in the day, but if we can find out, we will. How many individual, unique jokes are there on penguin packets?
Thanks very much, James.
Thank you very much. No, thank you, Daniel. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Civic duty, does it still exist in the UK? Should house buyers face consequences for pulling out of advanced sales? Doctors, listen to women. And the latest on the virus hit cruise ship.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12 year olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:49 is the time. Prism with a M. Prism. P-R-I-S-M for mama. Ma. What's ma in the NATO alphabet? M for Malcolm. What is it for Michael? Microphone? No, what is M in the NATO alphabet? Come on. M. Alpha. Bravo. What? Murdoch? Mother? It's not mother. Is it mother? What's M? What's that? What is M in the NATO alphabet? Anyway, P-R-I-S-M for murder. Not prison. There's loads of people currently in Gateshead trying to find the prison cafe. And as far as I'm aware, there isn't one. But Daniel's magnificent establishment is Prism Cafe. And it's in Saltwell Park, so you shouldn't need much help finding it. Okay? Thank you. Mike. Mike! Not mother. Keith, honestly. Is K Keith? Should be. Doug's in Brighton. Doug, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Doug.
It's about the cat's, how should we put it, table manners and why they leave the gallbladders. Yeah. Well, the reason why they leave it, first of all, is if you think about, you know, what gallbladders do, it's not very nice. They produce bile. And if you've ever been that ill to the point where you are just producing bile, you'll know how foul that is. So bile not only smells awful, it tastes awful.
We kind of knew that bit.
Yeah, we did. So that's why the cat has no interest in eating it.
Do you know, you've just done something really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So I was watching Louis Theroux earlier on Amelia de Moldenberg's show, you know, the chicken shop thing that she does with famous people.
Yes.
And she asked him a brilliant question. What's a better question, why or how? And he quite correctly answered, why? And I'm the same. I always think why is a much better question than how. And the example Louis gave was that if someone's murdered someone and you say, how did you murder them? And they say, well, I strangled him. And that's it. It's the end of the conversation. You say, why did you murder them? Then you've got, you know, you've got a podcast series. You've got an absolute story. Yeah, but this is the opposite. The cat's gallbladder, I'm more interested in the how than the why. The why is quite easy because it's vile.
I'm getting to that.
I know you are. I'm just providing a bit of colour.
Thank you.
Carry on.
I'm sorry, I was a little dull of colour.
No, you weren't dull at all. You weren't dull. I was just struck by that. But this is an example of the how is a better question than why, the why is a better question than how, not being completely true all the time. But here we are. So how? How does a cat avoid the gallbladder?
Okay. Well, cats don't look at their food because they can't see. Their short-term vision, their short-range vision is rubbish. Mm. You put something in front of a cat and they won't really be able to see it if it's any closer than about 3 inches. Mm. But what they do have is an incredibly well-developed sense of smell and taste. So they know exactly what they're doing. So it's not necessarily that they will eat their way around the gallbladder. You get the same sort of thing with polar bears. They do it with seal liver. They don't eat the liver because
what Helen's done and what we've all done consequently is imagine that cats have exactly the same skills and palate and senses as a human.
Yeah.
But they don't.
They don't. It's all smell and taste. And what the cat will do, because clearly a mouse's gallbladder is a great deal smaller than a cat's mouth, the cat will nip it out and then just spit it out.
And then
continue to eat. Because any of those internal organs, like the liver, like the gallbladder, aren't really very firmly anchored. They sort of, you know, move about inside the body cavity to a degree. They're not sort
of fixed on. So you'd sniff it out. And then sniff it out, spit it out,
and then carry on their meal.
Sniff it, nip it, spit it. It's like see it, say it, sort it.
Pick it, lick it, roll it, flick it, whichever you want to do.
You've lowered the tone there, Doug Craigley. Qualifications?
I've spoken to you before. I'm normally talk to you about insects, but it turns out I'm not bad at general anatomy, and I've got a cat.
Paleontology, was it? What was it? No.
That was the one. Yeah, paleoentomology.
Lovely job. Round of applause for Doug.
Thank you.
Cross that one off. We're not crossing a lot off today, but that's fine, because we're having fun. Charlie's in Newton Abbott. Charlie, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Charlie.
It's about your dishwashers and slugs.
Oh, yes.
Primarily, it's food. Food are basically slugs are attracted to food, and dishwashers have food in them because obviously, if I can speak properly, because people don't generally clean their plates off properly.
Oh, no, I mean there's a big debate about how much rinsing you're supposed to do before you put a plate in the dishwasher.
You're generally supposed to rinse your plate off before you put it into a dishwasher because generally a dishwasher is as classed as an autoclave, so it only sterilises really.
Okay.
But the reason that a slug is attracted to it, one is food, but what a slug will do to it is it will destroy electronics.
Yes. You've heard about this before. You've come across this before.
Yes, I have.
Slugs in dishwashers.
Yeah, well, I do. It's my living.
Because David got a dishwasher person round and he'd never heard of it before. So you have come across slugs in dishwashers before?
Oh, yeah, slugs in dishwashers before.
It's like the sequel to Snakes on a Plane.
Oh, yes. Slugs in dishwashers. But, yeah, it's electronics. It's also, believe it or not, slugs trails that they leave will affect they'll affect sensors in a dishwasher.
Wow.
And also, they will block pipes. So they will crawl up the waste pipe and they will block it.
Ooh.
Generally, what blocks a pipe, though, is fat more than anything. But that's what slugs are attracted to.
God, this is magnificent. Is there anything he can do? What advice would you give him if he called you in to fix his problem?
Well, if it was a commercial dishwasher, I would have pretty much most things apart. Electronics-wise, you can't really... If it's older than 9 years old, you might as well buy a new dishwasher.
He's replaced it twice, Charlie, already.
Yeah.
How can he stop the slugs? Rinse the plates.
Yeah,
are you serious? Stop. That would do the job?
Seriously, I would clean the filters in the dishwasher because people don't clean the filters
I do, actually.
But people don't. They just don't.
No, I know they don't.
Filthy animals. Oh, yes.
Qualifications?
I'm a laundry catering engineer.
That's magnificent. So you do this kind of stuff on an industrial scale?
I do this for basically commercial. Yeah.
Sensational. It's got you a round of applause, that has. And it's probably got David a solution to his slug problem in that he's got to take away the temptation. Take away the temptation. Great work, Charlie. Thank you. Dan's in Pencord, is it?
Almost Pencoid.
Pencoid. Question or answer?
Answer to the penguin question.
Carry on.
So there was a YouTuber who actually asked this same question a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
So he basically sat in a car park of a supermarket, going in and out, buying multi-packs to sort of figure out the same question. So he started out just getting, I think it was four packs, and noticed that two of the packs had the same jokes in them, but also different fronts.
Oh, yeah.
So he went in and got another four packs. So I think he ended up with about eight packs of eight. The numbers could be wrong there, but he ended up with nine individual jokes. So it doesn't necessarily mean that that is the exact number of jokes there are, but they were different in different multi-packs.
Have they always been there?
I couldn't tell you if they've always been there. I mean,
I don't remember jokes in penguins. I don't remember. Maybe I just never noticed.
You have got a couple of years on me, so it could be down to that.
Yeah. Well, they could have introduced them in 1981 or something like that, when I was nine and you were seven.
I appreciate that, but... underneath the flap where the sort of like wrapping.
Yeah, Keith, turns out Keith's a bloody expert on this, but I had no idea they had jokes on penguins. And I'm not like that excited about it.
As well.
What?
They've got facts on them now as well, which I don't remember growing up, but. Along with the joke, they have sort of.
So we reckon about nine?
About nine or so, yeah.
And it's not a definitive answer, but I'll give you a round of applause because I'm in a wonderful mood.
Cool, thank you.
No, thank you. Did you know they had jokes on penguins?
Yes, I did, because I quite like a penguin.
It's just me, then.
It's relatively new, though,
in the
annals of time.
Ah, it is. Okay, then I didn't miss it.
I don't mean like a couple of years, but
no, I know, but I haven't had a penguin for years.
Yeah.
Not really my biscuit of choice. I'd rather have a breakaway. Otis is in Bellingham with the last question or answer of the day. Otis, question or answer?
Hi, I've got an answer for you, actually.
Carry on. You're going to have to make it snappy.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So it's about the...
Pick up the pace.
It's about how scientists know how long it takes plastic to deteriorate.
Oh, yes.
We can't simulate the passage of time, obviously not directly, for obvious reasons, but what we can do is simulate the effects that take place in that time.
Oh.
So plastic left outside will see summer, winter, extremes of heat and cold.
Yeah.
It will also see increased or lowered UV light impacting it. So what scientists can do is subject plastics of different kinds to accelerated patterns of heat, cold, different levels of light, different levels of UV, see how long it takes to fall apart and use...
Multiply it and magnify it and extrapolate and conclude. That's beautiful. Qualifications?
I have a BSc in physics, but I actually found this not long ago while looking up information regarding the Pacific garbage patch.
Well, I mean, you just would, wouldn't you? I'm going to give you... Otis, have a round of applause from me.
Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant, Miss Chair. An absolutely vintage show. Magnificent. Just one little mistake I need to correct. It's from John, who's a train driver. It's see it, say it, sorted, not see it, say it, sort it. And that's it. If you missed any of this show, and I really would... Oh, hang on. I told you who the winner was at the time. It's Emily and King and Ace. They all get the game. I told you that if you missed any of this show, I really would actually recommend you listen back to all of it if you want cheering up, especially the Guy Gomer interview, which is probably a career highlight. Well, I don't know if it's the career highlight, but it's definitely a career highlight.
I missed it.
Oh, you know who he is.
I do, indeed, yeah. That lovely little face.
He did the face.
Yeah. Did he do the face?
He did the face. I asked him to do the face.
I'll listen back.
You should watch back as well. It'll be on YouTube, Sheila. Don't worry. You get the full effect. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including... Watch that while eating a penguin.
Ha-ha. Actually, your earlier dad joke actually made me laugh
Which
out loud.
One
the one about slugs in dishwashers is the sequel to Snakes on Trains.
One day, you see, eventually.
Yeah.
The best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store. Now, Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3, there looks to be a gender pain gap in this country. Women reporting not being listened to by their doctors. I've certainly had experience of that. Not just on gynae issues either. I've got a story. I'll bet you have too, so we'll talk about that at 3. At 2, have you ever been let down by a buyer very late in the process of selling your home? Should there be more consequences for such buyers. But I'm going to start, as you did actually, James, on the question of civic duty. I listened to your hour with interest there. Gary, the guy from Sainsbury's who was sacked for intervening when a man tried to, A, steal champagne and then was throwing bottles at his colleagues. I think the solution is for companies to allow staff to intervene at their own risk. I don't want to see civic duty ring-fenced and ended.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, various countries, including the UK, are working to trace passengers who left a cruise ship before a hantavirus outbreak became known. Two British people who returned home from the trip last month are already self-isolating. Officials insist the risk to the wider public remains very low. Dr. Sarah Pitt, virologist at the University of Brighton, has told LBC she's confident that the outbreak can be contained.
It does require extremely close contact, and although it is possible, we think, that someone who doesn't have symptoms could pass it on to another person, it looks as though it's only like the day before you get infected and you're not infectious for all that long. Although we don't know lots about it because we don't have that many outbreaks, it is something that should be possible to contain.
Rail passengers are being told to expect delays and cancellations for the rest of the day following an earlier fault with the radio system. The issue has been resolved, but services across southern England are still disrupted. South Western Railway, Thames Link and Gatwick Express are some of the operators affected. A 28-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of selling former Downing Street Chief of Staff Morgan McSweeney's stolen phone. Scotland Yard say he is not suspected of being involved in the original theft in October last year. The phone may contain messages about Lord Mandelson's appointment as British ambassador to the US. President Trump has predicted the war in Iran will be over quickly after holding what he described as very good talks. Iran says it's reviewing a new proposal, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. Defense and security analyst Professor Michael Clark says he believes the White House is looking for an off-ramp.
President Trump feels boxed in, and this summit he's going to in China next week, I think, looms large. He didn't want to go with this thing unresolved. It looks as if he's just decided he's got to fold. I think we've arrived at the point where the United States is desperate to get out and is looking for a way out.
And the US Secretary of State and Pope Leo are holding talks in Rome. Marco Rubio is hoping to repair relations between Washington and the Vatican following tension triggered by the war with Iran. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 61 points at 10,376. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, mostly cloudy this afternoon, though the east and south will see some sunny spells. Showers affecting the north and west with drier weather elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We're going to keep a close eye throughout the afternoon on developments around that virus-hit cruise ship. We know that a number of passengers, sadly, have died. A number are ill and being seen to medically in different hospitals in different countries. We know that two Brits, at least, are isolating at home, and that there are efforts now by the health authorities to track down, it shouldn't be too difficult, but to track down 80 or so passengers from a plane that one of the people who went on to contract the disease flew on to get to hospital. So there's still concern around spread. There's not panic around spread, but there's concern around spread at the moment. So we'll keep a close eye on that and on plans for the ship to dock permanently and definitively at in the Canary Islands. It hasn't yet, but that's the plan. We'll see whether that happens as well. That's throughout the afternoon here on LBC. Going to start, though, with a story that I listened to it at the beginning of James's programme, heard it reflected as well on Nick's, and I think it's one man's story and one store's story about shop theft and what to do about it, when to intervene, when not to intervene. But I happen to think it has a really important lesson, in a way, and a question, more than a lesson, actually, on civic duty. We don't talk about civic duty very much, do we, in those terms anymore? But I was thinking about it this morning, about what it means to me. And I think it means a lot to me. I know I joke about intervening in public and, you know, challenging people if they litter or I mean, I don't do it constantly because it doesn't happen under my nose constantly, but challenging people on noise and that kind of thing. You know, it does matter. It matters that we have a sense of civic duty, our common spaces, our common areas, to one another. It's not all about us, is essentially my take on civic duty. I wonder what you think it means to you, and whether you think we still just about have it in this country. I think we very much do still have it in this country, but I think it needs a bit of protection at the moment. So to that story of Gary, the Sainsbury's employee, who has been speaking to LBC, Helen Hoddenott, LBC's reporter, who's been dealing with this story and getting to know Gary MacArthur and what happened to him and the impact of losing his job, what the impact that that's had on him. Let's go back to the beginning in case people are just tuning in for the first time today, Helen. What happened to Gary in his workplace?
So Gary MacArthur worked at a Sainsbury's store in West Wickham in South London for 15 years, and he told us exclusively how important his role was to him.
The job meant everything for me. It was my heart and soul, really. The community was just my heart. I am more in touch with the older community that came into the store. I'd greet them, I'd hug them, I'd chat with them. We'd laugh, we'd cry sometimes. So there's a real sense of love and loyalty for me and the colleagues and customers.
But then one night in December last year, the shop didn't have a security guard on duty because the guard on shift had suffered a suspected stroke earlier in the day. Gary had actually helped to give him CPR on the shop floor, and he was then taken to hospital. But Gary, clearly aware of the surge in shoplifting, which he described to us as pure looting, he agreed to stay late that day to help out the all-female staff feel a bit safer. And that was when a notorious champagne thief came into the shop and grabbed a bottle. He was well known in the area for only coming into these shops and grabbing high-end champagne and making off with it. Gary saw him, escorted him out, and we're told he took the bottle off the thief. But the thief went back into the shop, started smashing bottles. He threw two in the direction of his manager and another colleague.
From there, he's dropped the bottles, ran down aisle three. I've grabbed his arm. Another customer's grabbed him by his throat and his other arm. Again, with this, I understand. Obviously, the thief's got a bit more aggressive and tried lunging forward. I've grabbed his legs, put him down to the floor with another two other customers at the time holding him down, waiting for the police to come. Police come, give him statements. And that was pretty much the end of that story.